Welcome to Roguecast, the official podcast of Rogues Gallery. We'll talk comics for the week, as well as whatever news is on our pop cultural radar. I'm Randy.
I'm Nick.
This is Dave.
And now, on with the show.
Episode 420 of the Roguecast, recorded June 20th, 2023. Spock ears and Londo hair. All right, y'all, this is episode 420, and in celebration, we're going to be blazing up here in the Rogues Gallery. By which I mean, it's 100 fucking degrees in here.
Yeah, it's...
It's not quite that. It's like 74.
It's not 100 yet.
It's for the new viewers, we do record this in the office at the front of the store. Office which is set right against that. It's a bunch of frosted windows.
Yeah.
I think it does help a little bit, but it is still stuffy, and it gets warm in here. Every once in a while, we're able to, get the AC. I don't know why it varies. And sometimes it gets very chilly in here. But yep. Today is not that day.
We suffer for our art, people, and our art is podcasts.
And so if we sound a little sleepy or perhaps in a torpor, that's why that and all the pots.
Yes. But also, I am, for those who don't know, a big Summer Forever person. I think it should be hot all the time.
Right.
One of the few things I like about Texas is it's hot all the time.
Right. If you were Cobra Commander and you had the Weather Dominator,
it would be hot all the time.
And Destro would be like, "Do you want to try the ice and hail and the storms?"
No.
And you'd be like,
"No.
Just set it for heat, Destro. Just leave it on there. Don't." Who's been touching it?
You think Cobra Commander's a "don't touch the thermostat" kind of guy?
I think he kind of is. Yeah.
Yes,
he is. Don't touch the heavy water thermostat.
We'll have to send out a Cobra mission team to get more heavy water if you keep touching the thermostat.
But I we are currently in the I have to apologize to all my friends for it being hot because I like it a little warm. And even for me, it's a little warm right now.
Go ahead and lord it over him, Randy.
All right, fair enough. Okay.
My phone tells me if I step into the sun, I burst into flames. So
Nick, were you looking up and determined that we are hotter than Death Valley today?
Yes, if you step out in the sun, the real feel of the sun is 126. Death Valley is 106.
Yeah.
We're 20 degrees higher than Death Valley.
But how much cooler are we than, like, Alderaan?
I mean, Alderaan no longer exists because it was destroyed.
And the space there is cold again, Randy.
Yeah, it's cold there.
But at peak heat, it was hotter on Alderaan than it is right now in Texas.
Randy makes a great point.
In, like, the split second as the Death Star ray hits it,
look,
maybe...
Are we?
He said peak heat. His words were factually accurate, as Randy's lawyer. Those words were factually accurate.
All right, so free RPG day is this weekend.
Yes.
Come out, get free RPGs.
There's some cool stuff.
Dave won't be here because Dave won't be here.
I won't be here. I don't work on Saturdays.
No, you don't work on Saturdays.
You were here for last
for
time.
Chumps. It's for chumpos.
They've done roll on Saturdays.
So I'm going to come out Friday night, which is also my day off, and set it up.
That's true.
Let's just know what I did for you people.
Dave suffers for his art, which is setting up free RPG.
That's right.
Know of his sacrifice.
But yeah, that'll be out. We haven't opened
the
boxes.
When I put it out, I wear a crown of thorns. Okay?
Nobody asked you to do that.
I like it.
And you wear one of those X's like Wolverine was crucified on?
Yes. Yes. So we'll have free RPGs to give out. We haven't opened the boxes up yet, so we don't have a comprehensive rundown. But
hey, when do we have free time to do things
exactly,
like that?
Exactly, we do not. We got a whole bunch of new dice in today. We had to check all those in.
Yep.
Some cool new dice.
Yeah, there are some good new dice and some good restocks.
Yep.
Board Game Day coming up July 15th. We do have sign-up room for all of them. We're doing Azul, Star Realms, Flamecraft, Starship Captains, the Miji, Horrified Clank, and Marvel Dice Throne. You can see the whole list on our website, on our Facebook page. You can come and sign up in-store. You can drop us an email. Get one of those four or five spots at the table. Come play games with me and John. We're going to teach you right how to play games.
Yeah. I imagine there's got to be at least a few games that any given person might be down to try out in there. So don't be shy. Come on out and try it.
Right.
What is it going to like? When they play one, like an hour?
Yeah, hour and a half.
Something like that?
Yep.
Yeah. We'll do a brisk version of it.
Yep. So we got a couple things from Kickstarter this week. We got a game called Heroes and Hardships. This is an RPG. It is another universal RPG system. It sounds like the guys who made it are basically a bunch of guys who've been playing games for 30 years. They sort of built this system out of 100 different RPGs they've played. They decided to make this best part of all the games they've played.
Okay.
Which I've had those thoughts of like, oh, what if I combine this from what I like from 4th edition D&D to this from Pathfinder to this? I've never done it because I don't have any time.
What if, like, Randy, you for the driving rules, like, you took Car Wars?
Yes.
And, like, it just, like, the most elaborate rules for every possible given thing.
Like, Spycraft had amazing rules for some of its classes and stuff. And yeah. So, like, I would steal some of that. But, so, basically, this is a, they say the rules are flexible and as crunchy as you want. That you can use your own world or adapt a beloved IP. The core mechanic is a D10 dice pool mechanic.
Okay. Yeah, Randy, you were noting that's people who are familiar with the White Wolf games, yes. Or I guess World of Darkness, I should say, because White Wolf doesn't always they've jumped around publishers.
Yep.
But yeah, World of Darkness, like Vampire and all that stuff, always did a D10 pool.
They've got three different power levels, so you can play it like low fantasy, hard sci-fi, up to high fantasy, up to superpower.
I like when they have those options because sometimes you want to pay. Sometimes you want to gritty realism. Sometimes you want to be probably like Fast and Furious heightened realism. Sometimes you want to be a superhero.
They've got their abilities, which they've got skills. They've got abilities like kind of their feats, which means you can be anything from a mounted warrior to a romantic. Those are two just the random things that I spotted here.
What if I want to be a mountain man?
I believe you could be a nature lover.
All right, fair enough.
Passionate about the outdoors and knowledgeable when in the wilderness.
Now, that's not a class, right? That's got to be like these are just bonus feat things. Or something like
you
that.
You could be a beastmaster.
I would like to be a beastmaster nature lover.
You could have artist therapy. You could be a magic user. There's a whole bunch of different stuff in here.
Go back a page.
This piece of art. That's
a great piece of art.
Yeah, it's like a 50s guy in a
like detective
coat.
What is he at a lunch
he's like
counter?
He's like a diner, 50s diner with a gray alien also in like a Boy Scout uniform.
Yep, that is some weird stuff going
there's
on there.
There's a V alien looking kind of thing.
Oh yeah, that is for sure a V
there's
reference.
Like a cyborg. There's all kinds of cool little art throughout.
They definitely like have. That's pretty good art. Yeah. It looks like the art is meant to prompt you to think about all these different genres and things that you've liked over the decades and stuff like that. So
yeah.
So this is called Heroes and Hardships.
Heroes and Hardships.
Yeah. If you're one of those who perhaps one of the companies we won't name names, but perhaps one of them made you a little annoyed lately.
Maybe a big company say. Tried to renege on a license they've had for multiple years, or maybe sent a law enforcement agent out against some innocent YouTuber.
Yes.
I don't know, well, you know, just as an example, that kind of thing could happen.
And if you were maybe a little cranky pants about that, then there's some options to poke around at.
Indeed.
Actually, the store has always had a lot of options, but...
Yeah, but we got more.
Now there's one more.
We also got, speaking of other systems, we got the Everyday Heroes, which is the sort of... D20, basically the 5e version of what was D20 Modern.
Yeah.
And
they keep putting out source books that have like licenses. So they did Escape from New York and they did The Crow. And the newest is
Pacific Rim.
Yep.
The Guillermo del Toro's Giant Robots vs. Monsters.
Yep.
And King Kong of Skull Island.
So this is a double kaiju theme.
Yeah.
That's cool.
If you want your robots versus kaiju, and if you want your.
King Kong must be like Kong and Skull Island must be like a survivalist adventure.
Or you're playing like Agents of Monarch or something.
Yeah, it does say Monsterverse on the back of it. Yep. But so these are adventures and also source books. So you take them and it'll guide you through an adventure that's loosely based on the movies. It's usually an original story that's based on the movies.
You know, Randy, I know of your fondness for, like, conceptually, if not always in execution, for the Monarch idea.
Yeah, love the
idea. Hunting the kaiju and stuff, and that's a pretty cool idea. I'd like to flip through one of these and check it out and, like, see what details they come up with. Because I looked through their Crow book, remember, and I was like, oh, they have very cool ideas for character creation for different, like, animal stuff that you're bonded with, like your animal spirit thing.
Yeah,
it's not just a crow.
It's not just a crow. It's like there's cool.
You can bond with a raccoon.
There was at least 8 or 10 in there. Like there was a spider one. There was something like a raccoon one or like a
turtle.
Mongoose or something. But anyway, they were all cool and they had like different thematics as it was associated with them. So there's probably some kind of cool lore they've built up for Monarch, which might actually be. I'm going to say notably cooler than the movies, which do have cool concepts, but they don't exactly dive into them sort of on the on a deeper level.
I still like the movies, even though they're dumb fun.
Well, I don't, but
sit there in your wrongness.
I like Kong of Skull Island.
I agree.
I think we all like Kong of Skull Island.
We
right?
do all like Kong of Skull Island.
And part of what's fun about that is he big monkey.
He big monkey.
he wrecks people.
Yes, he does.
The monsters there wreck people.
So, you know how you get little reels that show up on your Facebook occasionally? Yes. I got a reel last night that was like, this is one of the most hilarious death scenes ever, which I'd forgotten.
I posted
it. Did you post
that?
Yep. Okay. It's like Shea Whigham, and he's like, he's doing his grenade suicide run.
Right.
And the monster like spots it and sweeps him into a wall.
Yep,
right.
With his tail.
They go to slow-mo and they're playing that like choir music or the, like a chorus of angelic voices as he makes the heroic slow-motion sacrifice, and it just tail slaps him into the fucking mountain.
And he explodes.
Yep. And he explodes. It's so good. I think that was probably one of those things where the movie won me over.
Yeah, that was pretty good.
that and its constant stream of 70s soundtrack.
Yeah, it is.
And you know what?
And Crazy Samuel Jackson.
Crazy Samuel Jackson.
Yeah, we'll be talking about music, how music can work. We'll talk about Beast Wars later.
Yes. Oh, yeah. This game, by the way, the Kong of Skull Island should straight up say, like, before you begin the game, begin putting together your 70s soundtrack. Have you put Creedence Clearwater Revival on there at least three times?
Yep. It should also say, make a backup character.
Yes. Yeah, actually, that'd be kind of fun. You know, famously or infamously, the edgy Dark Sun set, or Dark Sun?
Yeah, Dark
setting
Sun. For I thought you were going to Paranoia.
No, remind me of Paranoia in a minute, but Dark Sun was, you know, a sort of survivalist, scorched earth, road warrior-ish kind of fantasy setting for D&D in the 80s. I mean, it's still around, but that was when it came out.
Yep.
And you would make, like, two characters because one of them to get killed. Paranoia, I know, was their kind of dark sci-fi, darkly humorous sci-fi
thing.
Yes,
it was satire. It was the computer running everything.
You were also expected to die in that game.
You were clones. Your character had, like 1 through 9 was their name.
Right, so it'd be like, I'm Randy 7 or whatever.
Yep. I'm Randy 7.
And also, you can die in character issue during, like, Traveler.
That's right? Traveler, yes, yeah. Yes. And I think probably a few other games have picked that up from Traveler.
Yes.
Because, yeah, what would you would do in Traveler was, of course, recreate your education career, your military career, find out what the highlights were, if you were got a commendation here or there, if you saw any action. And there was a small but possible chance that you might die during it, which I always have to give him credit for it. Whoever came up with that was a genius.
Yeah, the thing is, like, my kid is constantly making characters. There's something to the idea of character making as a game, as a mini game.
Yeah, yeah. And there's some board games that do that. But, you know, I remember, like, when we were playing City of Heroes, half the fun of that and a lot of MMOs and stuff is making up a cool character and playing around with the graphics engines and stuff.
Yeah.
Well, and there's that one that's like the month of 30 days of making new characters. I don't remember which month it is.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I think it's you can pick any month. It's just that you choose a different game system for every day and make up a character in it.
I did that a couple years ago. It was fun.
Yeah, those are cool. I did it for about 7 characters, and then I was all done. But I had a good time doing it.
Yeah.
And I think it's a good example of you can do as much or as little as you want. So really what we're trying to say is do that meme thing.
And if you need some game systems to build characters for, we have them.
I mean, that's true. At least a few of those should be based on weird indie games like Skeletons.
Yes, or Heckin' Good Doggos.
Make a skeleton, make a Russian dog.
Or a 1,000-year-old vampire.
Make a 1,000-year-old vampire.
All right.
Heckin' Good 1,000-year-old vampires.
Doggos.
We got a couple things from USAopoly, the company that makes... they have Marvel Dice Throw, and they have a bunch of licensed games. They have a lot of party games that they do. They did Tapple, which we've talked about.
Yep.
A couple of games that I played one of these at Gamma called What the Cup. It comes with these custom cups, look like the red cups, you know, red solo cups.
Yep.
And they have a D12 in them. Okay. And it's sort of balanced, and you can roll it, but the D12 doesn't escape.
Right.
And then you each sort of, you're guessing it whether it's high, low, with the other people around the table. And you're trying to be the last one. You're trying to, basically, after you change the dice, there's little cards being changed dice and that kind of thing. At the end of the turn, you want to be the one with, like, either the highest or lowest, depending on what the card is.
Okay.
And you're trying to sort of... There's cards that you swap with your neighbors.
So it's a bit of a bidding war with some complexity.
And bluffing.
Like,
and you bluff like what you've got.
Liar's dice.
Yeah, a little liar's dice.
Liar's dice plus.
Yeah. It was a lot of fun. It's a really easy to learn and has some nice complexity to it. And then Mismatch, which is a matching game that is definitely aimed at younger players, but looks like a ton of fun. It's a quick party game type thing.
Younger players.
On the regular games.
This is almost like that was a store inside joke that our minds just all, I think, cast back to. But.
Yep.
We're giddy from the heat, I'm sorry. It's like Death Valley in here, but worse.
We've got the guild map sheets and session books. These little tearaway books.
Yeah.
It's like 25 pages of maps, so if you want to do like a quick draw map. And they've got some different terrain on the back.
Yeah. Oh, right. Kind of so I saw these. These are almost like just a different format of those like roll-up maps for D&D that look like wrapping paper.
Right.
This is just like they're just in like squares that you can tear off instead of like having them come rolled up. It's just another format, but it's always good to have those. Those are super handy.
They also have session tracker sheets, which have like, you know, notes and monsters and hit points and all that kind of stuff.
Yep. Now, dumb question here. I think Guild or whatever is just the company.
Yes.
It's no tie-in to that old Felicia Day, the Guild.
No, it is just called GYLD. That is the name of it.
What?
Or maybe it's Guild.
Let's see.
Maybe it's Child.
Do you have any of those Guilde sheets?
Guilde sheets.
Guilde.
We got Transformers deck building game, The War on Cybertron, which I assume takes place on Cybertron.
I would assume so.
And it is a standalone and an expansion for the deck building game.
That's cool.
We got the Field Guide to Action and Adventure, which is a basically a sourcebook / adventure that combines G.I. Joe, Transformers, and Power Rangers, because they all use the same system.
Yeah, it's all the Essence system.
Yeah.
I hadn't actually seen that out there. Yeah. So early on, they were kind of sort of saying they are not compatible, but no, now they're like...
No, the deck-building games aren't compatible.
Uh-huh.
The role-playing games always have been.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. You want to fight your Zord against Optimus Prime? You can now.
Okay.
In fact, if you want to add magic, you can add their My Little Pony system when it comes out.
Right on.
I mean, My Little Pony and Transformers have already crossed over. Yeah, why not?
Then we got the G.I. Joe RPG. I know this will be very exciting to some. The Sergeant Slaughter box set. You want to play one of his outlaws?
Renegades. Get it right, Randy.
What do I know? He's a wrestler.
You don't know nothing about it.
What's he even doing in G.I. Joe?
He is their drill sergeant, sir.
Whatever.
He is a good drill sergeant.
Not like a serious Days of the Weather Dominator. But yeah, that's like its own thing. Does it have an adventure in it? Do you know?
I think it does.
I think they usually tend to do that.
But this is the special edition of it. They're only doing a limited amount.
Right. The license is limited. So basically, if you want Sergeant Slaughter in your G.I. Joe game, get it now.
Yep. Right. Otherwise, you cannot slaughter.
You cannot have an outlaw, renegade, whatever they're called.
Renegade, outlaw, yes, scary man.
Scary man.
I'm sure you could be Mercer. Mercer better be in there.
You can be Mercer.
Yeah.
I know who Mercer is. And then we got an expansion for the Terraforming Mars spinoff Ares Expedition called Foundations, which
Ares Expedition is that its own separate game?
Is its own separate game and it's sort of a sped up version of Terraforming Mars.
Okay, yeah. Is there a name for that sort of subgenre of games that's coming out now where it's like the scaled back version, you know, the faster play version of whatever game?
There might be. I don't know what it is though.
Let's call them, somebody walk in and say, hey, do you have any of those smaller scaled-back versions of larger successful games that are like it, but thematically, and use its core mechanics, but are not quite as long?
I think you need to workshop that.
This is probably an acronym, right?
Yeah. Do you have any Skrgakitiats games?
Skrgakitiats.
All right, let's talk about comics for this week, for June 21st, which, this is a pretty solid week. There was a lot of stuff. Some big number two issues and a couple notable number ones.
Right, it's both a Tom Taylor Tuesday and a Jed McKay Tuesday.
It is, that's right.
No Ryan North. It's not a triple threat.
But there is a Jonathan Hickman book.
Yep. There's a Jonathan Hickman book, which is what we're going to start with. It's his Ultimate Invasion number one, which sort of revisits the Ultimate Marvel Universe, which... was such a, for those who were there for it, that's just, Ultimate Spider-Man was probably the biggest success in it, but it had elements of the Ultimates, their Avengers comic, that influenced the movies.
Yeah,
it's, it had a big impact. Brian Bendis and Mark Miller worked on it, but also Warren Ellis and a bunch of other, Robert Kirkman was in there, Brian Vaughn,
mm-hmm.
And was a huge thing for about a decade, I guess I'd say.
But then it died.
And then it died. Mm-hmm. Miles Morales was the one character who kind of like escaped, seemingly, Lost Universe.
There's another one.
We'll get around to that in a second. And he came to our universe, and he's been milesing it ever since. But yes, in this one, I think it's baked into the premise, so I think we can say who the person is, right?
And he's been around for a while.
And people who've read like some of Hickman's stuff probably have encountered.
Yeah. Where did he first show up?
Oh God!
Was it in the Ultimate Universe, or was it like he's not from the Ultimate Universe? He's a
is he not? I guess I thought he was.
No, he is.
Is he? Okay.
Yeah.
It's so the Reed Richards.
It is the Maker, aka Evil Reed Richards from one of the multiverse things.
Yeah.
He is being held in some kind of super secure damage control prison. By the way, I'm not.
Is that damage control? As in,
yeah, I'm not 100% sure. I like damage control.
It's straight up Ultimate Reed Richards.
Oh, it is just Ultimate Reed Richards. Okay.
Yeah. Damage control is usually the guys who clean up the wrecked cities after the superheroes.
But because of the MCU, they've become sort of the police of the superheroes, and it's sort of made its way to the mainstream.
That's weird.
They've sort of taken the role that S.H.I.E.L.D. used to have.
Yeah, I don't like that because I liked them when they were like sort of blue collar cleanup dudes.
Yeah, now they're fascists.
Oh, great. But anyway, it doesn't matter too much for story purposes.
No,
they're holding him, and there's a pretty cool and like, oh, what is happening here? Kind of
there's
escape.
There's a good heisty breakout.
Yeah,
there,
at
yeah.
the beginning, that has some kind of neat twists and turns.
Shows and you exactly how dangerous the Maker is.
Hickman definitely has a crush on the Maker because he it is his book. This is definitely all about him, and he's got a plan that involves the Ultimate Universe. We don't know exactly what it is,
but it has a really good ending.
Yeah,
I thought
it
was
a solid ending.
Miles, by the way, is indeed featured in this.
Yep.
I actually thought that scene was really good.
Yeah, it was pretty good.
It was one of those books that I was expecting not to care about.
I was going to hate it.
And I was like, oh man, the execution here is high.
Yeah.
Hickman's good.
I'm not a huge Hickman fan.
But he's done things.
Most of his stuff.
You really liked his FF run, right?
I did, although I didn't finish it.
Okay. But, I mean, you read a pretty good chunk of it.
I've read some stuff from him that I liked, but I definitely have soured on him of late. This reminds me why I've liked some of his stuff. It's a really interesting focus on a villain. It's an interesting setup. And we know from solicitations that we're probably going to get new Ultimate Universe out of this, and I don't know how exactly that's going to happen.
Right.
But I'm curious.
I will also say that Brian Hitch's artwork was
it's really
solid.
Good. It's really good, yeah.
Honestly kind of soured a little bit.
I know artist names. He was, of course, the original artist on the Ultimates. He was the one who kind of came up with the look for Cap that brought in sort of a more military look where he'd have like military belts and kind of gear on it. And that would become the look of the movies.
Was he the decision maker behind making the model for Nick Fury, Samuel Jackson? Or was that
Millar? Yes, he was.
That was him.
Well, it might have been Mark Millar who said, hey, do that. I honestly don't know. Nick, do you remember that Ultimate Nick Fury briefly showed up in Ultimate X-Men for an issue or two?
Oh, yeah.
And he was, I think, was he colored... where you couldn't tell whether he was black or white, I think it was.
Yes.
And he certainly didn't look like Nick Fury yet then.
Yeah.
He got to do some cool... Mark Millar was writing that too, of course, so he probably had in mind doing more stuff with him. But he did some cool spy shit in it.
That's right.
And... but yes, when he made his way over and appeared in just the Ultimates, that was when he 100% was visually patterned on Samuel Jackson. Obviously, that one worked out for them.
Yeah. But... I think it was a really strong first issue. If you had any love for the Ultimate Universe, I would say check this one out.
It's worth a read.
Or if you're just a like Hickman guy or Brian Hitch guy, like I think it's. I fell off the Ultimate Universe with I read Ultimate Spider-Man for quite some time.
Mm-hmm.
That was the best book of the lot. But I kept up with the other ones for a few years. But I fell off of it well before it shut down. And I have to say, this is a pretty good first issue. Where I don't think you need to have any sort of like deep fondness for it. If you just kind of want to see a cool superhero crossover by or like interdimensional sort of suspense plot, Hickman's going to deliver without you needing to know details.
I think I will say that I fell off of Ultimates when Loeb got his hands on it.
Oh boy.
But
man,
at the beginning of that,
he was a ruinous effect.
Didn't
on
he have Blob Eat the Wasp?
Yes.
Yep. Among other things.
But, I mean, like, those original books, X-Men, Fantastic Four, Spider-Man, and Ultimates, that was some of the stuff that got me back into comics.
Yeah, I was going to say, that would have been bread and butter for anybody who was kind of getting into comics around the early 2000s or, revisiting.
So, yeah. Cool.
All right. We have the Scarlet Witch Annual, which kicks off what is going to be a series of annuals this summer called the... Is it Contest of Champions? Contest of Chaos.
Huh.
That is going to basically... Emma Frost. Agatha Harkness.
Yep.
She's young and hot now. Sure. I don't know how. It didn't
okay,
really...
it's not a flashback. Nope. It's a...
I'm sure she used some sort of magic to suck the souls out of people
That's
to turn
what
her
seems
young.
To be. Very well, basically, she's going to be... She's going to be pitting characters versus each other. So Spider-Man will fight Wolverine, Iron Man versus Storm, Human Torch versus Ghost Rider, that kind of thing. That's going to
be
like the annual.
I want to see that fight.
It all sounds fun. This is actually her coming to Scott to Wanda. And kind of getting Wanda to try to basically like acknowledge that she is super powerful and that she needs to ask for help. And Wanda basically showing off her power and saying, "No, I'm fine, thank you." it's weird. It's not adversarial. Like, Agatha was her teacher. So it's less adversarial than it is in, say, the MCU.
Okay.
But they do seem to have this history together, and it is sort of a... They are fighting...
So it's a blending a little bit of...
Yeah.
That's art's really good. Yeah. Javier Nieto?
Yeah.
Carlos Nieto.
Yeah. I'm behind in Scarlet Witch right now, so I didn't take this one to read, yeah. But I did flip through it, and the art is
so
superb.
I also fall behind on Scarlet Witch, but I want to pick this one up, and it does... You can just jump in on this
like
one.
Most annuals are made to be like that.
Yeah.
It's really good, and it's got great art, and I found it to be a really interesting status quo. I'm curious how the Covenant of Chaos stuff or Contents of Chaos goes. We got a new Incredible Hulk number one, relaunching after Donny Cates' run kind of crashed and burned. This is by Philip Kennedy Johnson, who's running Action Comics.
I haven't read this yet, but it looks like people who liked Immortal Hulk might find some stuff to like in this.
This is definitely a very much what happened right after Immortal Hulk. Nick Klein is the artist. Artist is beautiful.
Yeah,
and he is doing sort of a monster thing. His pitch is that the Green Door, the thing that allowed them to become immortal, has been closed. That happened in Immortal Hulk. And now Bruce is basically trying to... The Hulk is actually, like, angry at him, and it's almost like the Hulk is stalking him, even though he is with him.
Right.
And he is basically trying to stop the Hulk from destroying things. And it seems like it is going to treat the Hulk very much as a monster and drag in some of the other monsters of the Marvel Universe.
As I was flipping through it, the kind of like the artwork is very sort of shadowy and detailed.
Yeah.
And it reminded me a little bit of like, say, Javier Salteras on the 90s Ghost Rider.
Yeah, yeah.
Or an artist like Kyle Hotz, or even who's that guy? Kelly Jones, like Dead Man and stuff. Anyway, it's a pretty cool looking horror vibe to it. Hulk fans, you know, check it out.
Dave, there's another Bone Orchard Mythos Tenement.
Yep, I have read this one. It's an intriguing start. It's
for those who don't know, that is Jeff Lemire and Andrea Sorrentino's sort of broad umbrella books.
Yeah, so a little bit of a I think, although I haven't really quite seen this side of it, but a bit of a shared horror universe,
right,
that they're doing. Where, but most of Lemire's stuff stands alone.
Yeah,
it's just that I think he's kind of doing a little bit of that Stephen King Dark Tower. These characters, you know, exist and have some sort of shared universe stuff. But anyway, it's set in and around the strange doings of, like, a single kind of sort of rundown apartment and, like, seven tenants whose lives... It's narrated by somebody you don't know who it is, but who's, like, some kind of, I don't know, almost like other dimensional being who sees the kind of invisible lines connecting their lives. And you kind of, the camera, it's almost if the camera went into the building and sort of followed them, and then when somebody would go and talk to their neighbor or tell them to keep the music down or could I borrow this or that, and the camera would then stay with the neighbor for a bit. So it's kind of an introduction to the characters and their lives, and Lemire is actually really good at all that kind of, like, normal people stuff, but, like, not boring normal things that are happening. It's interesting scenes that reveal a lot about who they are. Everybody seems a little bit under pressure. I think a lot of them are struggling with money and stuff like that. So I'm going to say relatable. And then there's weird horror stuff going on. I think Lemire people kind of know his vibe.
Right.
And this fits with it squarely within that. And he's worked with Sorrentino several times now, so you also kind of know the look of that. What was the long... Gideon Falls. That was their biggest project together.
Yeah.
If you liked Gideon Falls, if you're a horror person, or if you just kind of like Lemire in general, I'd check it out. What's it? Tenement, right? That's the name of it.
Tenement. Then there is Godzilla, Here There Be Dragons, which has a fun concept. It is basically there's a pirate telling a story to his jailers, And the story is about how he went to the end of the world and met the dragon there, and the dragon there is Godzilla.
Right.
It's a cool idea.
Yeah, it's a fun idea that all those old maps with dragons out there, it's like, oh, yeah, those weren't mythic dragons, but rather kaiju.
Here there be Mothras. This week we have Nightwing number 105, which is notable because it is another one of sort of Taylor's, I don't want to call it gimmick.
Right, high concept issues.
I mean, this is sort of what, what's his name did on Hawkeye for several issues.
That's true.
Where they did the entire issue that was all from
sign language and Lucky's
perspective.
So, this is a story in which the cover sort of gives away, it's called You Are Nightwing, and the entire thing is from Nightwing's point of view.
Right, and you might say, like, well, all those issues are from Nightwing's point of view. Like, but it's like, no, I mean, it's like you are seeing what he's seeing as if it was a first-person shooter,
yep,
and you're playing Nightwing.
Yep.
Except in this first-person shooter, this guy, like, launches out the window about every 7 seconds.
Yep.
Redondo does just phenomenal work on this. There's a couple of uses of, like, reflective surfaces so you get to see what Nightwing's doing.
Yep. Right.
There's an explosion which, like, shakes. It basically gives the effect of the whole book shaking, and that's just really impressive.
A solid story at the heart of it, which is a kind of a time ticket, not quite ticking time bomb, but a little bit. They have a limited amount of time. There's sort of a hostage situation, and there's some a couple other superpowered beings involved. Actually, a couple of bad guys who might not be as bad as they seemed, or might not be the worst person out there.
Like any Taylor book, it's going to have some nice little twists and turns.
Yep.
Yep.
He's further developing his big bad. There's some great banter between Nightwing and Barbara.
Yep. This is the one where the preview page that they showed a few months back was great. Like, it's essentially like Nightwing waking up, so the camera's like kind of tilted on its side, like you're sleeping. And he's, of course, got Babs sleeping next to him. And she's talking about his, like, she's like, what does she say?
Bad
she kind of makes fun of his
he
bad
said,
breath.
You should brush your teeth, and then
his puppy
Bitewing comes in and licks his face.
Bitewing comes over and licks the camera face of you, Nightwing, because you are the Nightwing in this. Anyway, yeah, the previous one that they did that was one of the concept books, Randy, was the one where it was like kind of like all one big panel. Is that what it was?
Yeah.
Sort of like so it was a big chase sequence one, and Bruno Redondo drew the hell out of that one too. So this is another successful experiment, and it's fun, and you know, and it builds out the lore of what's going on in Bloodhaven currently. So it's also a regular issue too.
Yeah.
But yeah, if you'd like to see an artist kind of really pushing themselves to do something that's honestly pretty difficult, I know as good as Redondo is, that is still not the normal storytelling by any means.
Taylor is definitely giving him a lot
and
to do.
So
and he's doing a great job with
it. If you're a person who kind of just like would like to see, how would you do that? You know, almost like back when when they did the G.I. Joe Silent issue that was so influential that generations of people have tried to recreate the sort of perfection of that silent issue with other silent stories. This is another one of those kind of big experiments.
Tom Taylor also has Titans number 2 this week, which does a reveal about the big cliffhanger, which I really liked.
Yep. It has a use, I would say, of Brother Blood. None of whom, I don't think any of us are fans
of
what you would call big fans of Brother Blood.
Well, it's just that he's used in every Titans story.
But also, like, I can't, like, if somebody said, like, are there any good Magneto stories? I'm like, yes. I can name you about 5 off the top of my head.
Brother Blood stories.
How many great Brother Blood stories are there? Now, I know there are some good ones from the Wolfman Perez era. But, like,
I like the Giants one.
Yeah, but he's just not a favorite villain of mine.
No.
There's a rethink of him at work here that intrigues me.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay, I think this is a version I think I could like. But you know what I'm really just enjoying? I'm enjoying the Teen Titans when they're sitting around and talking to each other.
Lethargic Beast Boy is is amazing. He's like...
Yep.
I agree.
He's a little sad, but, you know.
I also think they do some cool... rescuey stuff. There's like a fire in Borneo.
Yeah, they're doing
like powers in kind of cool ways.
Yeah, that's almost more of the superhero as like fireman / first responder.
And we
also
get to see a character kind of step up and be a leader that we haven't seen in a little bit.
Yeah,
which I thought was a really neat call.
Yeah, and of course, who's the artist? She's killing it. Nicola Scott. Yep. Oh, for those who were worried a little bit in the first issue about the stuff with the Flash and thought, did they just kill off the Flash?
They did not.
They did not kill off the Flash. There's still some things to be revealed, but this issue very quickly reveals something that will make you probably feel better about that.
Yep.
And I thought was a cool idea, too.
This is the big week for team books again. Avengers number 2 also comes out. This is Jed McKay and Sia Villa. And Dave, did you get a chance to read this?
I did.
Okay. Their pitch for how Kang is trying to get their help, and the what he does to get their help, I thought was really clever.
Yeah.
And ties nicely into Captain Marvel's mission statement for the Avengers from last time, of like, we are firefighters, we put out fires.
Yep. And, of course, the framing device is her talking to Kang,
yep.
who seems like he might be mortally wounded.
Yes.
And I don't want to say too much about exactly what happens, but she... he's trying to convince her in his very imperious way. He never is like,
no.
Oh, please listen to me or whatever. Like, he's like, you're going to want to listen to this fool, you know, and stuff like that.
Yep.
And, but he does sort of put out an offering on the table, and then you realize, oh, the issue I've been reading, it looks like she just took up the offer, and now let's see how it plays out.
Yeah.
And it's a pretty cool and interesting idea.
And it's like, each Avenger sort of gets an event to...
Yeah, you get to see how they kind of, like, interact with the thing he told her about.
And I have to say, T'Challa's demeanor is probably the best in this.
Yeah.
His little event is great. Though?
My favorite was the scene that had Sam Wilson and a trucker in it.
That's really good. Also, I want my Avengers to be sort of big, but not quite so cosmic as like Hickman and Aaron did. And McKay is generally hitting the vibe.
It's accomplished that. It's like, and it's weird because Kang could potentially be very cosmic seeming.
And this is big. Like what he's doing. This is actually not so, especially like the last page, is not so far off from the kind of thing Hickman or Aaron would have done. I just like the way McKay does it better.
Yeah.
Right. There was, and also included, like as far as grounding it, that scene I was talking about with Sam Wilson Cap. It's like two or three pages of him talking to a trucker.
Yep.
And it's an interesting conversation.
Yep.
It's not some super crazy cosmic thing.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, I think that's what it is. It is big and cosmic, but also grounded.
Right.
I also, I'm liking it more and more seeing Carol as the leader.
Yeah.
I think she's
interesting stuff with her.
Doing some really interesting
stuff. I don't know who that artist is, or I forget who it is, but doesn't it remind me a little bit of Olivier Coipel?
CF Via?
I can see that. Yeah.
Very energetic, though.
It is.
Another number 2 that came out this week is Cyborg number 2, which I think...
I forgot to read that.
I really like this, so...
And, you know, I like the first issue notably, too, so I've been interested to see what they do with
it. You liked it more than me, and I actually like second issue better than number 1.
That's fair.
I thought they, they've got a good setup for Cyborg, the big
reveal. I think we all want Cyborg to succeed. I was a little skeptical because I don't know if he's just like a guy who is an obvious solo book guy.
Yeah.
But I'm like, okay, based on what you said about 2 and kind of how I felt about the first issue, I'll read this later. I'm like, okay, good. I'm happy to see it. Like, this might be happening.
We got the Vigil number 2, which is the sort of is the Filipino sort of special ops unit. I can't remember if it's Filipino.
It's like South America.
Yeah. No, it's India. Maybe it's India.
Oh yeah.
Their headquarters are in India.
Yeah.
So they have a special op who's going in to deal with some sides. This feels almost like a Warren Ellis book, like a lost Warren Ellis book.
Yeah,
a little bit.
Kind of like that, like a slightly edgier Black Ops.
It's superhero
thing.
Black Ops stuff. It's big weird science stuff.
Would you say it seems like Warren Ellis's Checkmate based out of India?
Yeah, if you like, say, Greg Rucka's Checkmate, or I'm trying to think of the Ellis thing in particular, the like Stormwatch.
What was that one thing?
Global Frequency.
Global Frequency is what I was trying to think of.
More superpowered Global Frequency.
Yeah, that's a good call.
But the mission in this one I found to be really interesting because they use their powers interesting.
Yeah.
I mean, they're not kind of like, I just shoot my electricity powers. Right. Yeah. There's thought behind all of it. And I thought the threat in this was very cool, and I wasn't quite, it was very kind of an Ellis idea.
Yeah, it's really cool. I liked it quite a bit.
Yeah.
Want to mention that the Secret Invasion trade is out this week. The Secret Invasion starts tomorrow on Disney.
Talking about Brian Bendis' miniseries from about 10 years ago
or
whatever?
I am not. Oh. I am talking about Secret Invasion Mission Earth is what it's called.
That's the Fury one.
Right.
And that is, Ryan North. Actually, it is a Ryan North day.
Yay!
This is the Maria Hill...
Yeah, Maria Hill
it was good.
Yeah, Maria Hill dealing with Skrulls. It's a really good, and it feels more like they're trying to do the espionage thing that the show is going to do.
Yeah.
It was a lot of fun, and I'm glad to see it collected. I would definitely recommend it.
That's some good surprises.
Randy, I'm going to just real quick mention, I know we probably just have a few issues of it.
Yep.
But it was an interesting and weird thing to see back, Wild's End.
Yeah.
Wild's End was a series of miniseries that came out some years ago by Dan Abnett, the hugely prolific English writer, but best known in American circles. He basically revived with his writing partner the Guardians of the Galaxy and paved the way for the movie. But he had long runs on Legion of Superheroes, tends to do sci-fi-ish stuff. He's right now... Is he the one doing the Groot miniseries? With Captain Marvel?
Yes, he is.
Anyway, very prolific and a talented writer. And Wild's End was an interesting thing. I think it was done... It's more in the style almost of a European graphic album with an artist that has to be a European artist.
Well, it's Ian J. Colbert, the guy who did the Lovecraft
ones, yeah. It has that sort of what I would say maybe like a bit of a Tintin look to it, very detailed, but they don't do a lot of shading. That's just not the tradition. But specifically, this has animal characters, and it's very English, so it's like...
Is this...
It's a bulldog, and it's a panther, and it's all of that.
Is this still sort of an anthropomorphized War of the Worlds?
It is.
Yeah.
It was set in, like, the first few ones were set in the 30s and followed, like, the attack and aftermath of... It was not literally the War of the Worlds, but it was so inspired by
that
it might as well have been.
Yes, yeah.
And I don't know what this new miniseries does with that story, but there is a thing where it shows a bunch of people on, like, a freighter or something on the cover, and there's, like, tentacles coming up from the water, which could still be, I think it's all still tied into that initial alien invasion. And that would actually be kind of a creepy idea where, oh, they warded off the aliens, but there's still some stuff in, like, the lakes and rivers or something like that. Mm-hmm. I flipped through it, and there's not a whole lot of alien doings in it. It seemed like it was mostly the townsfolk, these very, again, English villagers and stuff in the, like, 1930s. But I'm intrigued to read it, because I always liked those miniseries.
Yeah.
Anybody who likes that sort of, like, Usagi Yojimbo or what's the detective cat, Black Sad, stuff like that. If you like the sort of the anthropomorphic but kind of more serious side of it, check out the art in this. It's super good, and I think it has good story stuff as well.
Just the other stuff that was up this week on my reading list, there's an issue of Saga. There is the next issue is with Guardians of the Galaxy and Hallows Eve, which I've been enjoying. The latest issue of Superman, which I thought was really interesting. And All Eight Eyes, the sort of... Giant Spiders horror book from Dark Horse were all things that I read and liked.
And we've talked a few times about All Eight Eyes, a sort of maybe not perfect, somewhat flawed, but very interesting Dark Horse book that is kind of a fun real world-ish story about the secret world of giant spiders living under the city.
Indeed.
it's fun.
All right, I think that's it for comics for the week. We're going to take a quick break. I'm going to come back and talk about some news, and then we'll talk about some topics. All right, so we've got a few trailers to talk about, a couple bits of news. Let's talk about news first. Let's talk about they announced the director for Batman Brave and the Bold. Kind of a surprising choice. It is...
Real quick, Brave and the Bold is not like, say, the Batman cartoon with the goofy stuff from years ago. This is the next thing in the James Gunn line, or it's one of the upcoming
ones. The Gunniverse, if you will.
The Gunniverse, let's go with it.
Yes.
Is it going to be a Batman-Superman team-up?
I don't think so.
No, I think Batman Brave and the Bold will probably be like a Batman and Robin.
Yes, it was doing Batman and Robin, right?
Oh, that's the one,
like
yes.
Like Batman and Damian.
Yeah. Right, yes, I think that's exactly
it's going to be
right.
Edgy with Damian.
They should call it Batman and Damian.
I mean, we say that, but we don't know that.
You know what's weird? I guess Gunn does do
edgy stuff sometimes, but like, if somebody said, what's Guardians of the Galaxy, like, I wouldn't say edgy.
No.
Even Suicide Squad, which had some edginess to it, was pretty Guardians of the Galaxy-ish.
Yeah.
But this
the director on this is Andy Muschietti. Who just did
Flash.
Flash movie.
Did the It movies.
And the It movies.
Okay. I can maybe sort of see the lineage there.
Yep.
None of us have seen The Flash, so we don't know anything about it.
Other than what I've heard about it? and what I've read about,
but you know what?
Spoiler-wise?
At least in my circle of friends, I've seen a fair number of people who've liked it. Varying stripes of, there's anything from, it wasn't too bad, to, it was actually pretty good. I haven't heard any, it was great.
I've had a few people of, like, it was awful.
Have you?
Yeah.
Among friends?
Yeah.
I've seen that, too.
No. I haven't seen my friends say it was awful yet.
And reviews are sort of middling. Exactly what they were hoping for.
I had mixed feelings about the It movies. Like, I really like that Stephen King story. It's actually maybe my favorite Stephen King story. That adaptation I thought was really mixed overall.
Yeah.
But there's parts in it that I really liked. So, director-wise...
I don't know.
It's like, can he put together a scene? Can he make a movie? Yes, obviously.
Is he the perfect choice for this for a Batman movie?
Is he going to basically be helming the debut of Batman, or is there another Batman movie that will precede it?
That is the debut of Batman in the
Gunniverse.
Okay.
There still will be the Robert Pattinson Batman in the... What's that director's name? Matt Ryan? No.
Oh, Matt
something.
Something.
Matt Reeves.
Yes.
Matt Reeves.
I'll
say this. I think I would be. I will be more interested in even a potentially mixed bag, Batman and Damian than in emo Batman, 3 hour long Batman,
emo Nirvana Batman.
Yeah.
This crushed a lot of my hopes for Batman: Brave and the Bold, honestly, because the Flash movie has been looking less and less as something I want, and I want less ties to the Zack Snyderverse, not more. I want a clean break, and we're not going to get a clean break. It's very clear that we're not going to get a clean break.
What do you mean we're not going to get a clean break?
It's
still around.
But the Flashpoint was supposed to be the end of that, and it was supposed to be like, here is the Gunniverse.
Right.
It is clear that Zack Snyder stuff is still going to infect DC going forward.
Is that from something you know about, like, the ending?
It's the same director.
No,
I know nothing about the ending. But it's the same director.
You just don't want anybody who worked on any of the current movies.
Like, I know on the production side it's going to be some of the same people.
Yeah.
But I would like there to be new directors, none of whom have worked on any of the Zack Snyder movies.
That's fair.
You're
not going to get it, apparently.
I'm not going to get it. That's the thing. That's the way they're gonna work. I had hopes for the DC Universe for a little while.
Yeah.
Those steps have mostly been dashed at this point. I am...
Surprising no one, Randy has lost his enthusiasm years before the first of them arrives.
I hope that Gun Superman works for me, but this makes me nervous about the whole thing.
Yeah.
I mean, I've heard some weird things about the Superman movie, about it's going to introduce the Authority.
Yeah.
And Bleed. And I'm Superman
it's
movie?
It's weird, but it would make sense if that's part of the background story, because we know they're going to do the Authority, right?
Yeah.
Which is still weird.
When they made the announcement for Gunn, it seemed weird to me then. And the more I hear about it, like, oh, you're still not going to do, like, you may do something better than what Zack Snyder's universe did for me, but it still may not be what I want.
Right. I think that's fair to assume. But I will say, like, if somebody said James Gunn is making a Peacemaker show, I don't think we were all like,
nope, that...
I can't wait to see James Gunn's Peacemaker.
And Peacemaker
is a character who obviously can carry a show.
Yep.
I don't think any of us thought that, and there we are.
It was the best show of last year.
So Gunn himself can surprise. Whether he can ringlead and all that stuff, that kind of remains to be seen.
I want him just to make a good movie. I don't think he's ever going to make the Superman movie that I want.
I would like him to make a good movie, but what I really want is someone to make DC like Marvel was at its height.
Shared universe thing?
I want a great shared universe. DC deserves that as much as Marvel does.
Here's my question to you, though. DC has already had sort of, like, the best of movies.
Okay.
At least for me. I mean, Christopher Reeve's Superman, that is the best Superman movie they've ever made.
Yes, but it's dated.
And Tim Burton's Batman movie is the best Batman movie.
And Tim Burton's Batman is fun, but it's dated and has weird issues. Like, neither of them are like the pinnacle Batman or Superman.
But they are for me.
Yeah.
I don't know if they're ever going to make another one that is, like, exactly what I want. Because they've already made for me.
My point would be that, like, they've made dozens of Batman and Superman comics that I've enjoyed from various eras. There's no reason they shouldn't be able to do a Superman as good as Reeves Superman for the modern day without, you know, dampening
my enthusiasm. Yeah, I'm not quite willing to write it off on the basis of, well, I had a good Superman movie. Yeah.
Well, no, I'm not writing it off, but I'm like, I just want them to make a good movie. I don't know if it's ever going to be like 100% for me, like some of the Marvel movies.
We all have to, like, obviously give up a little bit, but the Marvel Universe at the peak stuff, I think, is a pretty good example of... how you can make a movie that changes some stuff but keeps the spirit to it.
Yeah.
So that we're all watching Avengers saying, wow, that felt like the Avengers. We're not all watching it saying, like, I guess it was kind of like the Avengers.
Yeah. Yeah.
It felt like the Avengers.
Yeah.
And yet we know that they changed lots of things, but the spirit was there.
That's all I want. I want someone with the respect for the comic source material that Marvel always had, and the ability to tell a serialized story that the MCU had, and that just doesn't seem what anybody at Warner Bros. Has any interest in doing, and it makes me sad.
And that might just come
I think
from
James
the top.
Gunn has an interest in doing it.
Yeah, but
I guess
I'm not sure how much of a say he's
but
gonna
it
have.
Is like it's also one of those things where it's like, well, when your kickoff does include like the authority and stuff like that, that does suggest that what he wants is still some edgy James Gunn stuff, so he can do his kind of darkly humorous things. And I just
think we're being built. It's being built on a foundation of crap,
of lies.
Like they're still looking at the Snyderverse stuff as they're kind of getting the worst of having your cake and eating it, too. Because the Snyderverse people are not happy. Because they're not doing Zack Snyder's vision.
Right.
And the people who hate Zack Snyder, like me, are not happy because they're still keeping one foot in there. Like, who are they making happy? I don't understand. It's a very weird call.
David Zaslav, that's who they're making happy.
I guess. I'm not sure that dude's ever happy.
I believe what they're trying to do mainly right now is do something a bit different. They're like, oh, what hasn't been done? Oh, the authority.
What hasn't been done? How about a crappy universe we spent a lot of money on?
But Batman, no, they've already done that. They haven't ever done like a really successful Batman and Robin, I'd say. And so that's pretty notable. And it's like Damian is himself his own dynamic. And so... If they pull it off, anybody know what age he's going to be? Is he going to be like 12?
We don't know anything.
Or is he
going to
be like 18?
They've been really.
I think they need to make him
this.
A crazy little 12-year-old, kind of like Hit Girl or
That'd
whatever.
Be amazing, yeah.
Well,
I don't know.
I don't know if they're going to do some course correction because the Flash did not.
Oh, it
do,
did not deliver. That's the thing. Like
much this weekend.
I would be much amused. And I don't want to wish for him to get fired.
If he was pulled off the production,
if he's pulled off the production, they're like, yeah, he's not directing anymore.
He's got to go and work on the director's cut of Flash.
He's going to go
apparently
do
there
it,
is,
which will have a different ending.
Apparently there is one that's 4 hours long.
It's the Snyderverse cut.
A slow Flash movie. Interesting.
Anyway, this just makes me sad. I was hoping the next time next director announced would be like, oh, that's really cool. Or, oh, I don't know this guy, but he's done some cool indie movies, kind of like what happened with the Spider-Man guy.
Yeah.
John Watts.
Who did Cop Car, and then
Cop
was
Car,
it.
And then killed it on Spider-Man.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. Anyway.
Which Spider-Man? He did
all three.
No Way Home and all that stuff?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And then... we've got the G.I. Joe comics. We had the news on that last week.
Yep.
They officially announced that G.I. Joe Real American Hero, the book that is being written by original series writer Larry Hama, continues on from 1980s G.I. Joe number one, is getting issue 301, starting from Skybound, a new jumping on point.
That's wild.
That's Kirkman being like, this guy knows G.I. Joe. He's been doing it for years.
I think that's a good idea to do.
Let's let him just keep going.
Well, here's the thing. I haven't been reading it. I stopped reading it.
I think we all kind of fell off of it.
But I read bits and pieces. It was always fun. And so I will probably give this a look.
Yeah.
Also, the covers are all by Andy Kubert. The first one looks really good.
Yeah, it does.
We also you remember those? No, Michael Golden did those amazing covers for G.I. Joe back in the
day. I'll say this. I was never in love with the artists that they tended to get at IDW.
Yeah.
Kirkman at least has launched this with an amazing artist on Void. What is it?
Yeah. No, the artist on Void Rivals. On this is Chris Mooneyham, who will continue to be the artist.
Okay, who's that?
I don't know. He's the guy who's been drawing it. Yeah.
I'll say this. They've usually been solid.
Yeah.
But. I also will check it out. You know what's interesting, Randy, is the idea of Hama getting a bit of a shot at the first issue again.
Mm-hmm.
I know it's issue 301, but he knows that there's going to be a bit of spotlight on him. So it's an interesting. It'll be interesting to say after 300 issues of G.I. Joe, what do you do to kind of maybe be new reader friendly at that point? I certainly think it's possible. You can write a new reader friendly issue of any given Marvel comic even after decades and decades of these characters.
So the other thing that's interesting is that at the same time they're releasing G.I. Joe, Real American Hero number 1, Larry Hama cut. Apparently, Hama's original script was altered in the original print run. I don't know how, I'm going to guess...
Wait, of what issue?
The very first issue of G.I. Joe.
Oh. Huh.
And so they're going to give the original, as he was originally going to do it.
Oh, that's wild.
Yeah,
is he going to do new art and stuff?
No, it's the same. It's the same story. It's just the script is a little bit different.
But, okay, so they're going to use, like Herb Trim's art and all that stuff?
Yeah, I believe so. Yeah.
Oh, interesting. What did the character swear in it?
I don't know.
If you can keep the art, if nothing has to change other than some dialogue, I wonder what it is. Were there some references to, like, current events? Did they talk about the Iran hostage crisis or something that was going on that would have been a little politically touchy to bring up? We know that he would do those kind of things sometimes throughout the run. Is like, he was a person who was not afraid to kind of poke at the power brokers and talk about... how the military gets manipulated and stuff sometimes.
Did you also see that they sent out the solicitations for all the Transformers?
Oh, I did not see the full
Cobra Commander Duke. So you kind of get a glimpse of what the story is going to be.
Yeah,
I think it sounds really cool.
Transformers
is about the Decepticons and Autobots crash landing on Earth.
Okay.
Danny Ward Johnson said, he's in hype mode, but him saying that he's been drawing Transformers since he was in first grade lends some fun ideas to him getting a chance of both writing and drawing kind of this new series. But then Duke, which is the first of four miniseries that they're doing before G.I. Joe relaunches, is dealing with the G.I. Joe Duke, especially finding out about the Transformers crash landing on Earth.
Okay,
so they're tying it together.
So G.I. Joe will be around as like an anti-terrorist organization or something like that, and then they're going to maybe transition into dealing with the Transformers or something?
A little bit, and then the Cobra Commander is about them Cobra using Energon.
Okay.
As a source of power.
One of the things that we guessed might be a possibility.
It sounds a little
for
cartoonish.
Cobra plots, like if they want to have a giant robot or something, Energon can power that thing.
I mean, they had a giant robot in issue, was it 3 or 4?
That's true. It was more like a mech kind of robot. But
I think we all talked about this a little bit last week, but I think Dave, and at least you and I, are like, don't put your Transformers in my G.I. Joe.
Right. Our G.I. Joe, the stuff that we were like really cut our teeth on was
it was military superhero adventure.
Military superhero adventure, but it was tamped down. Like, you remember when they would like be, do you remember that random issue? It was like around issue 40 or something like that. Mm-hmm. When Rakondo's leading them through the jungle and they're being hunted by like a mercenary pack. Yep. And they, it's just like a handful of guys with like assault rifles, mm-hmm. and they're like a real threat to them. The idea was like they just have to stay ahead of these guys, and they have to use all their tricks and stuff like that. But it was pretty realistic. They weren't like making a quip while they kicked ass, right? They were a little they were kind of joked around with each other.
Yeah.
But weirdly, for the considering how colorful it all looked, kind of realistic at times.
Yeah.
Okay, so I read this a little bit wrong. Apparently, JoJo and Cobra do not exist.
Okay.
The Cobra Commander exists, and he, I guess, this is, like, the formation of both of these things.
Was he just, like, a guy who would be, like, going down to, like, the supermarket, like, in his Cobra outfit, and he's like, oh, now I've got a purpose, but I've got energy.
I mean, probably not, but...
But he could have been, like, the leader of, like, a cult or a militia or something.
Right, but this is going to be a ground floor kind of rebuilding of both the teams.
Well, so I think where you were headed with that comment,
yes.
Randy, is I think you were talking about it's like, okay, it is clear they are going to collide.
Yes.
And that this will be probably a more sci-fi tinged G.I. Joe. And whether that means exactly like it'll be a little bit more like the cartoon where kind of anything goes.
Right.
Or like they're going to like, well, what if it was like that but a little more realistic?
Right.
Or like the science fiction was kind of a sort of a different stripe of sci-fi, more like Pacific Rim or whatever.
Yeah,
I bet we'll get a little bit of a blended thing.
But the thing is, like, what I was trying to say is that Dave and I are both don't put G.I. Joe on my Transformers thing. But I believe we are both warming up to this idea in the Energon universe.
I'm open to it. You know what I think? You know why I think I got like I would say 60 to 70 issues of I think like really great G.I. Joe comics as in that format. And that is a good long run.
What's kind of funny is you're saying the same thing you and I were both negating Nick on.
I know.
We're like, we had enough of the G.I. Joe we needed, so you can do something
right.
else with it.
Well, the thing is, I have seen them take their shots at that.
Yeah.
And it's not that they haven't all been, that they've all been failures.
No, that Cobra thing was great.
And that was a number of miniseries. Who wrote those? Christos Gage?
Yeah.
Yes.
So Christos and Gage did a bunch of, like, he did the serious-ass Black Ops G.I. Joe where it was like...
Hawk was like a horrible human being who was putting chuckles in, like, the worst possible place.
It was like Training Day and, like Donnie Brasco undercover. What do you have to do to kind of, like... get you know into Cobra, and Cobra was like super deadly.
Were you willing to sacrifice?
And so I've seen that side, and I've even liked some bits and pieces of, like, you know, the kind of more adventurous Devil's Do one way back when. It's not that there haven't been some other successes, but I am kind of at the point where I'm like, well, what is there anything a little different you can do with G.I. Joe? Yeah. And I think in that sense I'm sort of open to them go ahead and blurring it with the other iconic toy of the era.
The notion of G.I. Joe and Cobra being engaged in a war over an alien power source and that tying into Transformers, but also, like, giving Cobra a reason beyond just being, you know, super terrorists.
Yeah.
That like, they formed as an organization to try to use this energy to dominate, whereas G.I. Joe wants to use it to defend. There's some fun ideas in there, and I can definitely see it working.
One of the things I kind of like about that format is it does sort of remove it from real-world allegories and parallels.
Yep.
And, like, sometimes I actually don't want that. Yeah. But, like, what was I going to say? You know how they made, you know, Hydra were historically Nazi dudes in the comics, but they kind of just became their own evil fascists in the MCU movies.
Yep.
And so that's, it's not like, I don't think they were like, well, we don't want to, like, hurt the feelings of Nazis. I think they were like, well, we don't want to, like, touch on implications about the Holocaust and other really dark elements of World War II.
Right.
We want to be able to have this as, like, an adventurous thing that takes place in that era, but we don't want to bring down the whole weight of it. Well, likewise, we live in the era after the War on Terror, I think arguably really screwed up a lot of stuff in America, created a modern surveillance state, led to a lot of heightened military stuff that probably didn't need to be heightened, and panicked us into a war in Iraq. And so G.I. Joe as anti-terrorist guys is maybe not something I would be super excited to see, even though Cobra is kind of, it's always been its own thing.
Yeah.
They don't necessarily represent any one country. It's just an idea of general bad guys with machine guns. something a little removed from the real world that's a little bit more about good guys fighting bad guys, that's something we can maybe all get behind.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm on board to see what they do, and
we know Megatron is the same as Trump, though, right?
Yes.
I'm kidding. I would never impugn Megatron's name like that.
Even Starscream.
No.
All right, let's jump over to Marvel for another bit of weird Marvel news. It is weird to me that Marvel's news is breaking to the point of, like, it's spoiling stories months in advance.
Yeah, and I don't know if that's just sort of the era we live in. And in some ways, that makes me a little, you know, when Kirkman does one of his crazy things, like, oh, I snuck out a G.I. Joe comic.
He got Transformers out nobody knew about until the week before. It was great.
Yeah, I have to admit, that was a fairly impressive sleight of hand there.
And I understand there's a lot of retailers, and I understand the retailers are like, hey, we didn't know to order this because you didn't tell us Transformers in it, and they can't. It's like, I can't tell you because one of you guys is going to run a bleeding cool. Like, I get it. It's a frustrating balancing act. I think, on the whole, I would rather more Kirkman and less Marvel. I would rather just, like, don't tell us. Let us guess. I know a lot of retailers would disagree with me on that. But I would rather maintain the surprise and have my job be a little harder. Because my job is hard enough.
Yeah.
But if I could get some surprise to go with it, I'd take a little bit more difficulty.
When I think about some of the comics that are, like, sort of were the most impactful superhero comics of myself as a kid. And, like, sometimes I didn't even see these things happen because I was a little bit late. But, you know, when Beta Ray Bill first beat Thor, that was seismic.
Yep.
Like, people didn't expect that. They just couldn't believe it. And everybody had to know what was going on in Thor, and the only way you kind of knew is through fanzines and stuff like that, and like a few comic book newspapers and things that were kind of coming out of the era. And the buzz built, and, like, somehow I, as a kid, I was like 10 or 11 or something, and I still heard about it.
Think about how G.I. Joe 21 would have been underwhelming if for 3 months
the silent issue is coming.
The silent issue is coming. It's going to be all silent. it wouldn't have had the impact.
Right. Instead, it was just like you pick up a regular issue and you're like, that is the coolest Snake Eyes story I've ever read in my life.
So I would like them to go a little bit back. I don't know what the balance is because retailers will yell at them about that. I don't know what the answer is. Kirkman has done so much for retailers, I think he gets a lot of pass. And I think maybe that's what Marvel and DC need to learn is, like, hey, maybe you don't suck all the time at everything else you do.
Yeah.
And you could actually do the hype that people would work. But the reason I bring all this up is because we're about to spoil a thing that's been spoiled on the internet already.
What are we about to spoil?
Iron Man is going to marry Emma Frost.
Oh, right. So apparently there's a storyline coming up because we've seen the mock-up of the cover, or probably pretty close to the final art.
It is a crossover between Iron Man and X-Men.
Yep.
Which has been going on because...
Are they both written by Jerry Duggan
has been writing both. And apparently, yes, Emma Frost and Tony Stark are going to get married. Also in attendance, from scene in the back, Miss Marvel, who apparently... is not so. I'm actually starting to think that
they oopsied and included a dead character.
I don't think so.
Or she's going to be back that fast, which
X-Men.
Would make more sense.
She's going to be on Krakoa, I bet.
Yeah,
and resurrected with
new energy powers. Yes.
Yeah. Well.
Yeah. It's. I almost at this point wonder if it's.
I'm looking forward to the kind of the machinations of the when somebody will have to do the scientific gobbledygook, yep. You know, the techno babble,
yep.
Of like it's like it looks like what do you call it? Apocalypse was accessing the reincarnation technology right at the time and had introduced mutant genetics into yep. it. She's being reborn. Oh, it's having an effect on her cellular structure. I can't wait to see the actual writing on that.
Her creator, G. Willow Wilson, is writing at least some or all of the Fallen Friend one-shot.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I almost wonder if she is basically bringing her back in that issue. If basically her funeral issue is going to be, oh, she's not as dead as we thought.
And they should go ahead and
do
it.
They should, because everybody knows she's coming back, and it would undercut the death, but the death was stupid anyway.
Right.
Just like... Get it out of the way.
Well, the death was dumb because in the next issue, Peter Parker was basically moved on.
Yeah, he's
and,
fine.
Like,
yeah, he's all right.
And what's more, like, the art was, like, what, Ed McGuinness, and it kind of had a more of a fun, vibrant thing.
Yep, yep.
So, like, he's all crying at the end of one issue, and then it's, like, back to old, wacky Peter Parker the next one.
Tonal shift.
Anyway, yes.
Yeah. Anyway, y'all want to talk about this.
Yeah, no, I just wanted to mention it. I'm like, I will say this. I think we're all a little jaded and cynical, not without good reason. They sometimes have done some really dopey storylines. The Miss Marvel thing is very egregious recently. Yep. That was clearly a terrible idea. That said, I think that Marvel is probably aware of just sticking two kind of random characters together in a marriage. Not a great idea. By the way, didn't work, I think, great for Storm and T'Challa either.
It didn't, but that was actually a good idea.
Right, and at least I think they laid the groundwork for it. Now, I don't think Jerry Duggan has
been laying the groundwork in his Iron Man run.
Has he?
He's been doing backfill.
Have they been dating?
Backfill stories and that kind of thing. It's more of a nemesis. It's almost like frenemies.
Yeah.
And I'm like, if that's where they're going with this, if like they're getting married and they're both running their own scheme, I can see that working and being kind of
right.
fun.
Or I could even see something where it's like they're doing this because they need for Destiny, you know, the precog
yep.
from X-Men stuff, to think that timeline is happening, but they're actually trying to alter some future.
Right.
And this is like a scheme or something like... I expect Duggan has a story to tell, and he's
yeah.
not just like, oh, I think they're going to be a romance for the ages.
Yeah.
I don't think it's quite that goofy.
Yeah.
Now, will I think he pulls it off? I don't know. But I suspect... I do think that putting those two people in the same room together could lead to some good dialogue
yeah.
and some fun stuff. They're both snarky, they're both rich, they're both egotists.
Yep.
What possibly could go wrong? But
they both have
yeah.
a long line of exes that are.
That's true.
Madam Mask. And...
Yep, Madam Mask and didn't Iceman back in the day before he came out date Emma in the Gen X days?
I don't know.
I feel like she did. Also, Namor.
Yeah, yeah.
They did
yeah.
reveal that.
She's dated around.
Yep.
So, anyway, yes, I'm kind of in the, I think it looks stupid, but I'm not going to assume it's just the dumbest, most awful thing in the world until I see what his story is.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
I do think he probably has a story to tell. Anyway,
that's all. The last bit is for you, also, you guys to talk about. The Death Stranding film is being guided at every turn by its creator, Hideo Kojima. I have the vaguest notion of what this means.
I mean,
sure.
I think this is a good thing.
Right, so, and just as for a context thing, Hideo Kojima is a pretty legendary auteur-type game designer in the industry.
Slash madman,
for sure. Who's best known for the Metal Gear series.
Yeah.
If people who are like from the outside looking in who have never played one of those might just think, oh, isn't that just a thing where you sneak around and shoot people? I'm like...
Kind of.
But there's also like sort of almost like anime-esque elements of like very high drama...
Would you like to sneak around naked while...
right. He runs around naked. He's got enemies who control bees.
Yep.
There's a battle with a sniper where you can...
which may, in fact, be one of the greatest levels of any game ever made.
It's super good. It's a big extended sniper battle that could take you an hour to play.
And there's like 30 different ways you could track the guy.
Right, but it's not easy because he gets a good shot. But among the things you could do is, like, eventually you will both have to eat during this, because in that game, survival was the big thing. So you'll have to eat. You can, like, go to, like, leave some of your food that's spoiled near where you think he goes to eat. He will eat the spoiled food and get sick.
Yep.
And I think you could kill him with that, or you can at least hear him coughing and stuff.
You could also track him if you have thermal imaging goggles, because he smokes.
That's right. But
regardless.
He has a lot of... And the game... By the way, Metal Gear 2 was maybe the craziest one where there was, like, 30 minutes at the end of, like, that was just a movie. We know he's kind of a frustrated would-be movie director. Yep. And it had some actually deep ideas about information control that's kind of proven prescient, you know, in the era of both AI writing and art, and also how the internet has kind of made it so that controlling the flow of information or making it all seem false so that you don't trust any source also proved prescient. So he's got big ideas amidst the pew-pew stuff. Death Stranding was his weird apocalyptic sci-fi thing that was kind of... I felt like it kind of came out of Trump times and pandemic times, and it imagined a post-apocalyptic future where the rain clouds rained drops of water that would age you if they hit you, where ghostly baby-like things floated around in the air.
Causing, like, psychic damage.
Yep, causing psychic damage, and yet these weird little umbilicals connected them to the Earth. Again, kind of weird anime type stuff. So there was, like, very scary portions of the game, and you had to travel overland, and you were delivering packages, though, that were ultimately sort of like the postman, trying to unite the apocalyptic people who were otherwise very separate. I think in his way, Kojima was like, I want to try and unite a divided America. I think that's what he was kind of trying to do in it.
But I think that when they announced this movie that was happening, everyone was like, oh, well, they can't possibly
it's too
kind
weird.
Of capture the Hideo Kojima-ness of it all.
You almost, if you haven't played the games, you can't know how strange they can get.
So he's not directing it, but he is involved in every other facet of this production, which is pretty cool.
He is, like, in Death Stranding, among the things that, like, where you could feel his involvement is, A, he would stunt cast his friends and people he liked. So, who's the... Guillermo del Toro is a character in it, or a likeness of him, anyway. Conan O'Brien was in it.
Yes.
The soundtrack to it was all, like, music that he's into. The weird music that I, like... Like, when you find out, when you get some of the sound access to the soundtrack in it, there's little anecdotes and footnotes in there about Kojima. It's like, oh, he bought this album at a record store in Norway while he was bumming around. So he is, like, I do think he is kind of a creative genius, but also a weirdo. But I also think I don't want that movie to be just sort of a normal movie. I need it to be like his vision of the apocalypse.
Exactly.
Otherwise, why bother? Like, otherwise, it's that we've seen apocalyptic movies before.
Yeah.
Or dystopian movies. I'm happy to hear that he's heavily involved. Go ahead and make it as weird as you want, Mr. Kojima.
All right, let's talk trailers.
Okay.
We've got two from Netflix and one from Prime.
Yep.
I think it's Prime is doing it. The Babylon 5, The Road Home.
Right, you're doing that first?
Let's do that one first. This is a animated series. We talked about it being announced.
Based on the sci-fi show that your granddad watched in the 1990s.
You know what? You're not wrong.
A.K.A. Mean Ring.
We both love Babylon 5.
Nick watched it, but you watched it after the fact.
I did. I watched it after the fact. I'm not as cool
Dave
as
and
you.
I watched it live.
No, you were just younger than us.
Yeah, we're old men.
Babylon 5 was a groundbreaking sci-fi show. It had a big arc, which was kind of a unique thing at the time. It also had its own issues, but a very fondly remembered by anybody who watched it, I think, show. And now after... How long has it been?
Oh, it's been years. Decade, at least.
Oh, like 20-plus years since there's been, like, any material, I think.
Yeah, I'm like...
They made some movies and spin-offs, but it was all still in the 90s, I think.
No.
Yeah,
I don't think there was anything new by the 2000s.
Babylon 5 went from 1994 to about early 2000s.
Okay.
So, yeah.
And anyway, there's a new animated thing. Sadly, a lot of the people who are on that show, it has a weirdly high mortality.
Yeah.
And so a lot of people have died, but anybody, any actor who was still around, they got to do voice casting for it. They did a fairly big budget, without anybody knowing it, an animated movie for Netflix. And it's about the commander of the station, Sheridan,
yep. Mm-hmm.
Is it?
Yep.
Kind of becoming a little unstuck in time and...
It happens to him.
Revisiting something a lot of concepts. I mean, that is a thing in the storyline. And it's like Babylon 5 is like the Citadel in Mass Effect, a massive interstellar space station with like lots of aliens and ambassadors and big goings on there. That's the whole premise.
Yeah, it's crazy to me, Dave, that you and I used to like our touchstone was like Babylon 5. Like, oh yeah, the Citadel reminds you of Babylon 5, and I think it goes the other way now. Like, I think more people know Mass Effect than know Babylon 5. I bet.
For sure, absolutely. Unless you're at like a sci-fi convention for 1970s Battlestar Galactica.
Right, and then people will be walking around in the Spock ears and Londo hair.
Yes. I was happy to hear Londo in this.
Yes.
So I think it looked a little more kind of conventional than I might have liked. It's kind of like a little bit of revisit of greatest hits. It's like there's Zathras, the weird old alien Yoda-ish guy.
I wanted this to be like a bigger, newer story, and it does seem to be more like you said, a kind of a greatest
hits. Like, hey, you remember when Sheridan was in love with Delenn? Hey, you remember when they did a last stand?
Yeah.
So it looks like they're possibly going to some sort of what-if universes. So one of the big things is, you know, the war with the shadows, the weird, creepy alien creatures with, like, Lovecraftian overtones to them.
Yeah.
Who were ultimately defeated on the show. One of the universes he goes to is one where they didn't win.
Yeah.
And I'm like... That does sound potentially interesting. This sounds completely not new viewer friendly. Like it is just almost a fan servicey thing for the and JMS almost said as much. He said this is for the fans.
That's fine.
But the trailer looked, you know, it reminded me of sort of like some of JMS's writing weaknesses a little bit.
Yeah.
Some of the lines were a little hokey and stuff like that. But you know, I'm nothing like egregious. I still want to watch it.
More from this cast, or more from these some of this cast, more from these characters. I guess I'm happy to see.
Yeah, I always like the characters on there. So seeing, you know, I can't remember was Delenn on the show because Mira Ferlin, who played her, died.
Yes, so Delenn is in there,
but she's in there just a different voice actress.
Yeah,
so they've recast a lot of voices. I think
they cast where they could.
The Doctor's there, Garibaldi's there, like. But they did see, like, Patricia Tallman's back as Lita, Claudia Christian's back as Ivanova, which is maybe the biggest thing, because she was, because of contract stuff, not in season 5.
Right.
So maybe they'll let her get her, you know, final shot at this a little bit. I'm hoping the trailer is basically sort of a tease, but they're not showing us a lot of what's going to actually happen.
Right. So often trailers don't take time to show, like, you know, a good, like, extended scene, and that is, like... The best JMS writing stuff is usually when a couple characters are talking about something.
However, it may be the best of the three trailers we watched.
Yeah, that's possible.
Which leads me to talk about the two Netflix trailers we watched.
Yes.
The first is Heart of Stone, which is a Gal Gadot action movie. She is a some kind of like spy.
It's like an international spy team beholden to no government. And they do sort of larger-than-life spy action-adventure stuff.
It's
Citadel on Prime.
Remind me, who's in Citadel, or what's that?
Stanley Tucci.
Yeah.
Oh, okay,
So we're watching it, Dave, and you're like, what is this, a Greg Rucka? And then, in fact, it is Greg Rucka.
Yes. Yep. There was, like, two lines that I had heard in the thing, and I was like, I guessed the sort of hard-boiled female spy protagonist burnout kind of case. I was like, oh, that's so Greg Rucka, and it's like from the creator of
Old Guard.
Yeah. Pretty funny.
So funny. And then we just noticed the every line was like an action movie cliche.
Yeah.
And I think we all like that kind of thing, like Fast and Furious, that kind of thing. But something about this one was just like, it was off-putting the level of cliche to me.
Well, it's also like Rucka, it's not that he won't like kind of work with a little bit of cliche, especially with his kind of burnout spies and stuff. Yeah. But he usually, it's not, I wouldn't, if somebody said, does he write cliche dialogue, I would say, no, not at all.
Yeah, I wouldn't say that either.
No. Like, he writes really deep spy stuff, and, you know, his behind-the-scene politicking in, what was his big one?
Queen and Country.
That was sort of one of his breakout books from Oni a decade or two ago. And, yeah, but, like, this one has a lot of, not quite the "this ends tonight," but, like, you know, we need to shut down all the systems. It's like, I forget what all else they were saying. They've gone dark. It was all spy cliche stuff.
Yeah.
And like, it was like every line they were showing. We know that they like to do that stuff for the trailers. They need the stuff that's kind of poppy.
But it kind of seemed like a regurgitation of everything we've seen before.
Yeah. It's one of those where it's like, for me at least, I'd have to hear it's good from like some critics or some other friends.
Yeah.
Before I would give that the time of day.
I mean, I'm glad he's getting work with Netflix and
Gal Gadot's fine.
Sure,
Rucka has talent in him, like a lot of talent, but not getting great vibes.
This looks rough. And then the other one, I think we just don't know enough to say about, but there is a One Piece trailer.
Yes.
Netflix is once again doing live action anime, despite the critical drubbing they have received for every one that they've done.
Yeah. Yep. Now, none of us here watches anime.
Nope.
Not in any sort of extended way.
Nope.
Nope.
Have we seen it once or twice? Yes.
Sure.
But would you say we're anime watchers? No.
Have any of us seen any of One Piece?
No.
Is the... I think I can name that main character with this little straw hat.
What's
Nick,
his name?
Can you?
Yeah. Luffy.
Yep. Is it Luffy? I thought it was Luffy.
Or Luffy, Luffy.
I think you're right.
I think it was Luffy.
I think you're right.
I don't know. I know his arms stretch now.
His arms stretch, and I think we're watching this, and this, although it looked kind of whimsical, and he's like recruiting a sort of a pirate crew, and it sort of felt like a heightened reality. I know it's not really exactly meant to be. Like, Pirates of the Caribbean looks realistic comparatively.
Yeah.
Yes.
It's a sort of heightened, weird reality that almost looked a little innocent, like kind of innocent, fun pirates.
Yeah, they're children pirates.
But I know that, by the way, I always hear people always say, like, yes, but several volumes in, it's sad and tragic, and it has the darkest ending I've ever seen in my life. And, you know, anime.
Yeah, it's right. Every
do
anime.
That. It does do that. But this is kind of, but it does kind of look relatively grounded. And I'm like, when are they going to show the part? And then suddenly his arm's super stretched out like Mr. Fantastic. And I was like, there it is.
I will say, it was the most energetic of all the trailers we watched.
That's true, that's true. We were in a state of torpor and threatening to fall asleep when suddenly a child pirate's arm stretched out and punched somebody. And I felt like I could go on 5 more minutes.
Do we want to talk about the final trailer?
Sure. What was the final trailer?
Kraven the Hunter.
Oh, yeah, we have to talk about Kraven the Hunter.
Yep.
From the studio that brought you Morbius.
Very much so.
Do you remember just a couple years ago when it was Morbin time?
I remember Morbin
time. Now it's Kraven time.
Yes. Are you Kraven excitement? Are you Kraven adventure?
Do you remember that time Kraven got superpowers from the blood of a lion?
The Golden Age Flash, famously, his powers came from...
Mongoose.
Is it him or the Wizard? One of them.
Yes.
Their powers come from having mongoose blood. Not radioactive, not genetically engineered, just a mongoose.
Just mongoose.
If you put mongoose blood in any one person, they will become super fast. In this world, if you get lion blood in your cuts, not special lion, not genetically engineered,
just a lion.
You gain lion powers.
You gain lion powers and the ability to commune with animals.
Yes.
Like a Beastmaster.
Yeah.
Now, I think we continue, even after all this time of like 2 Venom movies and Morbius, and is there anything else yet?
No. Just all the Spider-Man.
Sort of baffled that they really are trying to do solo films with all these Spider-Man villains.
Get ready for Madame Web. I mean, it's already been filmed.
Sure. Yeah, yeah. and you know, Nick, you and I liked Venom pretty well. I actually thought it's a sort of surprisingly fun first outing. Good showcase for Tom Hardy. Second one, not so much. Immediately lost my goodwill. But it continues to be weird to do these like Spider-Man villain movies with no Spider-Man. It just seems bizarre.
And also, last time, a villain kind of a hero.
Do you remember when Halle Berry did the Catwoman movie?
Yeah,
it's Catwoman with no Batman.
Yeah,
like you get like even if you were doing that, you'd probably want to set it in Gotham and have lots of Gotham stuff in it. And instead, they seem to have done as much as they could to make, say, you know, Kraven the Hunter is a longtime Spider-Man villain, sometimes a little bit ridiculous, sometimes, but also in, like, one of the darkest, best Spider-Man stories ever, Kraven's Last Hunt. He's got an interesting pedigree. I'd say I'm a fan of him as a villain. What about y'all?
Yeah, yes. I like him.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Until now.
Look. Yeah.
Until now.
So here's the thing. I believe that you could easily make a fun Morbius movie, a fun Kraven movie that had nothing to do with Spider-Man, just telling stories about, like, this guy who's a hunter who's becoming like, you know.
Do you think they do need to be bad guys, or can they be anti-heroes?
They gotta be bad guys. They gotta be bad guys.
This guy's a crazy anti-hero.
He's an anti-hero. This is a slightly almost Red Bandish trailer because he stabs a few people in, like, arterial spray.
He bites somebody's ear off and spits it at the window or something.
Spits it at the camera.
What's weird about that? No.
He uses a trap to, like, crush a man's skull.
Here's the thing that they... Yes, that's true. It's like one of those bear traps, and he, like, flings it, and so, like, almost like a little... What are those? There's, like, something in one of those Mario games that had those sort of bear-trappy things. Anyway...
Mario's a lot bloodier than I remember.
Well, in the Mario game, it just might make you shrink down to a smaller Mario size. But here, it clamps around the man's head in like blood sprays.
Yes.
Anyway, okay, something they got right. He's really got Russian ancestry.
Yes. Yep.
Puffy Russell Crowe, who you might remember from some shitty possession movie, about 3 months ago.
Look, Russell Crowe got to eat.
Russell Crowe, he's clearly eaten a lot.
You might also remember him as a Greek god Zeus from about six months ago in Thor Love and Thunder.
Yep. Yeah. So he's been slumming it big time. This is a talented actor.
He's been Greek, Italian, now Russian.
Yeah. He is looks like a powerful but mean Russian man who may have had a wife who had like some sort of mental issues and had her sent away.
He runs like a Blackwater kind of group of mercenaries or something.
And he's trying to make his sons a bunch of little tough. He don't want them to be soy boys.
He wants to be hunter men.
He wants them to be hunter men, yeah. And so he's trying to raise alpha males.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
To do that, you hunt lions, right?
So they go out there and hunt lions on the savannah. And it looks like young Craven hesitates with his shotgun and does not want to shoot the beautiful lion, and it chomps on him, and a bit of its blood goes into his wound and makes him a lion man. And
a very sexy lion man. And then, because they did get...
Wait. He does grow up before he becomes sexy. He's not a 12-year-old sexy lion man, but that is where it starts. And then his path to sexiness begins. When next we see him... He is a brooding adult guy with kind of dark eyes and long black hair, and he's sexy man.
Until he lions out and gets the lion eyes.
That's true. He gets his eyes actually change into like lion eyes.
So, I will say, the look of it is actually like he looks cool.
Angela Johnson does look.
He's kind of like running and vaulting around like on bare feet all the time, running around on walls. Yep. Chasing after cars.
That looks less cool.
But it is like sort of like how like Cap or Black Panther would be running all at like superhuman speeds.
Is it bad that I would have been okay with that if I had just seen a scene with him taking drugs?
As I was watching this, I was thinking about, you remember a couple things. One is that I'm like, oh, in making superhero movies, you gave people the ability to do shit like this. I'm like, it was like misusing all the techniques. And the other thing I was thinking is, remember the X-Men in 2000? When we saw the pictures of the costumes, we're like, oh, these all look like shit. And then we're like, oh, in motion, they look great.
Yeah, they look fine.
Craven's the opposite. The picture, the movie poster of him, like, looking like a beast, like, hanging on this throne, it's badass. Everything with him in motion looks stupid as shit.
You know, I think it looked okay. It is weird, though, because in a lot of the scenes, he's, like, in plain clothes. So he kind of looked like, who's Aquaman guy?
Jason Momoa
in I think some of those movies where he's basically wearing like a dress shirt or something that's real tight, of course, over his swole body and just pants and he's like running around on walls and stuff like that.
Well, just wait till Fast and Furious 12 when Aaron Taylor Johnson joins the family.
Nick, you said you wanted Craven on drugs. I wanted to quick clarify to people what Nick meant. Traditionally, Craven is a normal guy. He's like, he doesn't have superpowers.
But he takes the heart of the rhino.
He will, like, drink some potions and stuff that make him all juiced up so he can fight Spider-Man. It's kind of like Venom and stuff like
that. He uses poisons. He was a true hunter. He wasn't a lion.
You know what? They alternately made out that, like, I guess he's always supposed to have been, like, a good hunter. But sometimes they make out that he's, like, a cowardly, skeevy sort of dude. And sometimes they make out that he actually has kind of a code of honor and stuff like that. The comics have varied over the years.
Yes, they have.
Here, though, he's definitely he says something like, he's like, you know, what is it? Like, you know, my father... did this, now he's like, I hunt villains or something like that.
Well, he's basically trying to take out the people that his father are saving.
Yeah.
I mean, that the Russell Crowe is the big bad of this movie.
Yeah.
That's maybe not the best.
Kraven the Hero is just a weird flex.
Yes. And then, of course, there was that final stinger with, do you know why they call me the Rhino?
I have a guess. But it looks like he, like, transformed,
you
like...
look like the Rhino?
It looks like he transformed, like, the Hulk instead of being, like,
he
the
transforms
Rhino is
into a Rhino.
Generally a dude in a costume.
Right.
Anyway. this looks, I'm going to say about, like, I thought some of the trailers for Morbius were fine. They looked okay. As whatever it was they wanted to be. Not what they should be, but, like, if it was, like, whatever they're doing. Here, if you were to just say, let's say this movie was not linked to Kraven, and it was just called The Hunter or whatever.
Sure.
And it was about a guy who was the son of an evil Russian oligarch who got these powers and is like now trying to dismantle his dad's organization. And it used superhero-type visuals, but it wasn't linked to Marvel.
I would say welcome to the early 2000s, but, yeah, you know.
I think that's fair. I think that's fair.
But, I mean,
but
that
be
sounds
less
better.
Egregious. There's nothing in it that, like, actually, other than kind of looking a little cliche, there's nothing monstrous looking about it, but it does look like another big misfire.
But yeah. I will say, the One Piece trailer looked better.
I guess.
For me, at least.
All right, let's take a break, and then we're going to come back and talk about some movies and some TV. All right, we're going to start off by talking about Transformers Rise of the Beast, which Dave and I saw, and Nick has said he doesn't care about spoilers on,
yeah,
because he's already spoiled a bunch of stuff.
But also, yeah. I think you have an interest in it. It's not like you have no interest whatsoever.
I just have had no time to go to the movies.
Right, you're going to probably catch it on streaming.
Yes.
So we won't be, like, spoilery, full spoilery. No.
But there'll be some spoilers.
Oh,
if you can. If you are not like Nick and you care about spoilers on Transformers Rise of the Beasts, you might want to skip ahead a little bit.
Yep. The gist of it is that we liked it.
Oh, I liked it quite a bit, yeah.
Yeah.
You liked it more or less than Bumblebee?
Less than Bumblebee.
About the same as Bumblebee.
Okay. Yeah. All right. So
I think it had different qualities, also a few weaknesses, but I also think, like, I thought Bumblebee had some trite writing in it, too.
It does.
And is not, like, some amazing movie. And, like, Bumblebee is also, like, very based on E.T. and, like, Iron Giant tropes.
And where Bumblebee gave us Hayley Stanfield as sort of the human character... We in this one we get Anthony Ramos.
Remind me what he's. What do I know him from?
In the Heights.
Right. Yeah, he was the lead for In the Heights. Great in the Heights, and I thought great in this. I'm not. You know, this is a Transformers movie that gives you more. I think generally more Transformers time of them talking, interacting, and stuff like that.
Okay.
But you know, they still are doing the human component. I actually think that's overall okay. I don't need it to be, like, say, set on Cybertron with no humans.
As long as the human component is actually good.
Yep.
There were human components in Michael Bay's Transformers movies.
It's just that it was, like,
I mean, they had
who's it? Lead character.
Shia LaBeouf.
Coked up Shia LaBeouf, the stammering, nerdy jackass.
Or stereotype Texan Mark Wahlberg.
Stereotype Texan Wahlberg. Only the sex object Megan Fox. Mm-hmm.
So hopefully they were better human characters than that.
So let's quick set the stage. It's set 7 years after, I think, the previous one, after the events of Bumblebee, which was a very 80s movie. So now we're in the mid-90s. And it's got like a hip hop soundtrack, which is, I think, really a pretty good one.
It's a really good soundtrack.
It is both some songs you'll recognize from the era, and like a little bit slightly more B side stuff. So it's not all the most obvious stuff. It's not like just Regulate and stuff like that.
No,
it's
no.
some other.
There
some
are
other
a couple obvious needle drops, but there's also a couple things that are less obvious. So,
exactly.
Yeah, it's really good. It's got the lead human characters are both interesting. They've got
decidedly not whitey people.
Yeah, there's a dude who is he's ex-military.
Yep.
He's training electronics.
Right. I forget exactly why he's struggling to kind of get a job.
His younger brother has leukemia.
Yeah. Right.
And he dropped everything. He failed a lot of responsibilities by trying to take care of his brother.
Right.
His mom,
good guy in a bad situation.
Yep. But clearly, like, smart, capable, And seems like one of these guys needs a chance.
And I think instantly likable.
Oh, yeah.
All of the opening scenes of them in the house, like, the movie won me over very quickly, yeah, or in their apartment, because they're funny scenes. Like, there's a bit where he's leaving, and he's, like, talking to his little brother, and he's like, hey, what do I always say? And, you know, you think it's going to be some inspiring thing, and he's like, bros before hoes?
Nice.
And there's some good, fun dialogue in there, and it's also, like, kind of some heartwarming stuff. It's got some heart, for sure.
Well, the director of this was it Stephen Caple Jr., who did, I think, Creed 2? Isn't that what he did?
Okay,
all right.
That sounds about right. Like, not an amazing movie, but a good movie.
This also has Dominic Fishback.
You told me, is she in Orange is the New...
No,
that was a different actress we were talking about.
Yeah, that's Peacemaker.
All right, so what do I know about her?
So, she was in Judas and the Black Messiah.
Okay.
She was in that show Project Power.
Yep.
And she was notably the first place I saw her. I forgot about this. She was in The Deuce, playing a sort of young prostitute.
Oh, wow.
In the 70s.
In this,
and she was in The Hate U Give. That was where I first saw her.
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
She's kind of a trod-upon worker at, like a museum? Is she an intern? Like a talented intern
at the museum, and she clearly knows a lot about, like, languages and history and that kind of thing.
Right, and she also is a little bit of a head for tech, so if they have to do computery stuff, she can kind of do computery stuff.
So, yeah. Where are the Autobots on this? Are they a known quantity?
The two of them, some stuff comes in the museum, and it's, like, got, like, the Beast, it's got the Beast logos and stuff like
that.
Okay,
so
the movie actually begins with a big action sequence that involves Beast Wars and the big bad of this, and his avatar. So the big bad, I think we can go ahead and say, is Unicron.
Yeah.
And Scourge is like his huntsman, his super scary huntsman type dude.
What he's supposed to be. Played by Peter Dinklage.
Right. And I didn't even realize that through the electronic distortion. Yeah. I was like, oh, it's a good voice, but... Anyway, there is a MacGuffin, the thing that everybody's after, and it's like this thing that would it would basically allow Unicron to come to Earth and start wrecking shit.
Okay.
Yep. And the Beast Wars, the Beast Dudes were kind of like, it was like they were the custodians of it. They were holding on to it, and they've had to take shelter on Earth and hide, but they don't show up until a little ways into the movie. Before then, it kind of like shows up in this museum, and then when... I forget what gets people looking for it. Probably it gets accidentally triggered, I think.
Yeah.
And so then suddenly some Autobots show up looking for it, some bad guys show up looking for it, fights start happening, alliances start forming between humans and Autobots, and the head Autobot we'll see is Mirage, a.k.a. Pete Davidson's kind of... Pete Davidson-y, yeah. Street-friendly Transformer...
So maybe not a one-to-one to what actually Mirage is supposed to be.
No, not at all. And, you know, they do the same thing, arguably, that the Michael Bay movies did, which was take the name of a Transformer and sometimes one or two of their abilities and then reinvent it.
Yeah.
But I really like Pete Davidson's character.
Yeah.
I have to say, his interactions, he's always energized the scene. He's got a good rapport with the lead dude, especially... They basically become friends very quickly early on because the guy has to make some money and he tries to steal a car and that car is Mirage.
Yep.
And that chase sequence is great.
It is.
It really is super good. And the first of many really good action sequences.
Are they clear? Like, Michael Bay's was very hard
These are much clearer to read.
Bumblebee didn't have...
You mean like the flow of action?
Yeah, flow of action.
Yeah.
Bumblebee had action, and it was good.
Yeah.
But Michael Bay's were messy.
Amazing. It's definitely not messy, though.
Yeah.
Okay. And it's pretty good. Like, I would definitely, say they did a good job. You know, maybe not, I might not say great, but
the
good.
The story's a little cliched, but it works.
Yeah.
Sometimes do say cliched things to each other.
Unicron's good. Scourge is good.
You know, I've always got your back, bro.
They have a couple Transformers that they introduced that are not in the trailers. I was kind of glad to see. Yep. I thought were good.
Oh, cool.
One or two of them I actually didn't quite like their interpretation, but once I saw their character do their thing for a little while, I was like, ah, it's kind of fun.
Yeah. RC get to be cool.
Yes,
RC's pretty cool.
A little off the a little more of a supporting character though.
Okay,
Michelle Yeoh gets to be very cool as Air Razor, the Falcon. She's very cool.
Optimus Prime is a little bit of a surprise in the sense that he is a badass, but it's clear that the weight of being stranded on Earth for this time and having... he feels like he's failed, sort of, the Transformers, and he's kind of a little bit of a hard ass.
Okay.
He's, like, kind of gotten almost, like, more militant, and he's like, humans should not be, you know, working with us. It's like, they threaten everything.
Yeah. He's occasionally gone now.
A little bit.
Okay, well, maybe I don't know if he's gone
well,
that
Well, no, but his arc is kind of like... we need to get off this world and get away from these people and stuff like that. Yeah. Without saying too much, he does go through an arc.
Cool.
And
I mean, it sounds like...
There's lots of pew-pew. There's some stuff that I didn't even see at all in the trailer, which is...
No, they definitely didn't
another
put
location
in, yeah.
that they go to. And I actually really liked all the stuff in that location.
Yeah.
Arguably some Tomb Raider-ish vibes. Hmm. You know how, like, in Aquaman, they did some exploration stuff, and you're like, oh, that didn't expect that, but that was actually kind of fun. Same here.
Cool.
Yeah.
Well, it sounds like it hits a lot of the good notes, and...
Yeah, I really liked it.
Yeah, biggest issues are some comes with some cliche. A few of the big action sequences, you're like, oh, this is very CG-ish. Not that there aren't still cool things in there, because there's actually continually cool fights, you know, actions things, but sometimes it has that, you know, end Marvel big CG battle vibe. So. Yeah.
Nick, you and I both watched a show on Max called, no, Peacock, right?
Peacock.
Called Based on a True Story.
Yes.
It feels like a Max show to me.
A little bit, because Kaylee Kokoa.
It feels like Flight Attendant, which I didn't finish.
Yes.
This one I finished, and I'm not sure why, because I didn't like it all that much.
Is it because you like Chris Messina?
No.
Okay.
It was just compelling enough that I kept wanting to know what happened next.
Somebody tell me what the premise is, and is this a half hour or an hour show?
It's a half hour show.
Yep.
Okay.
That's part of why I finished it.
Yeah, it's an easy show
to
finish.
It's eight episodes, I think. And four. And
so this has the chick from Big Bang Theory and Harley?
Yes.
Yes, and Chris Messina plays a washed out tennis player who is going through some trouble. In life, and his wife loves murder podcasts. Like,
she's pregnant,
and she thinks she solved who is a big serial killer that is going on right now.
Like, in this premise, solidly,
they have a plumber come out and fix their place, and she thinks the plumber is the West Side Ripper.
Okay,
and then decides that they're going to. She's like, instead of turning him in, we're going to do it. We're going to approach him, tell him no more killing, and then we're going to do an interview with the serial killer podcast with him.
Yeah. Okay,
because they need money. They're kind of living paycheck to paycheck.
Let me quick ask: this premise sounds like something that would be like a one season thing, is it?
No, it should be.
Okay,
that's part of it. It ends on a cliffhanger, and I'm like, you guys are dumb. I don't think you're getting a second season.
Is it a comedy?
I think they probably will. Yeah, I think they already got
that's
it.
That's the other thing. The tone is all over the map. Okay. Sometimes it's funny. Sometimes it's darkly funny. Well, sometimes it's dead serious.
Oh, and they utilize kind
like
of this...
that. Actually, mostly sounds good to me, at least in theory.
It wouldn't work for me.
Do you think it should? Did you get like tonal whiplash?
Yes, absolutely. I did.
Okay, Nick, what were you going to say?
Well, the thing they utilize in the show, which is a little weird, is this kind of they imagine what they want to do.
There are dream sequences in every episode, multiple dream sequences.
And it's like
in
this weird kind of like, is this really happening? Did this happen?
Yeah.
And it's kind
and
of like.
And it will go for long enough that you're like, wait, okay, this must be really happening. Oh,
and
no,
then
it's
they
not.
Cut.
What do you mean? Is it just supposed to show
like
our inner lives or like what we hope happens?
Somebody imagining like
murder,
the Ripper at one point imagines like killing everyone in the room.
So there's
she
a lot
of having sex with numerous people.
Do we know who the Ripper is?
Yes.
Okay.
We meet the character right off the bat.
Theoretically, they
it's
could
absolutely.
They could. I've seen some theories. The fake out.
If they were going to do it, I feel like they would have done it by now.
Right. I mean, it seems like it's a pretty on the nose kind of thing. It does have some weird tonal issues.
But Nick, did you like it?
I did enjoy it overall, mainly because I like the leads. I like Chris Messina a lot. He's
Nick,
great.
Huh? I need you to rank this on a press play scale. If you weren't a press play person, do you think you would like it as much? Like, did you get through it and think, "Oh, that was a good waste. That was a good spend of my because I got
good
through
waste
it.
Of time.
I got through it. I got through it. And I thought, boy, I wish I hadn't spent 4 hours on that."
No, I did not
really?
Feel that
okay.
way.
So you were really happy.
I think
you felt like
I,
you got something from it.
I think
okay.
I got something.
Okay.
I definitely would have changed a few things and deleted
it's got
some
flaws.
Stuff
for sure. It's got flaws.
But I like. The characters enough that I gave a shit about
them. I get
them.
That. I thought they were all kind of terrible people.
Yeah.
And that was a problem for me. Like, there was no one to root for. They were all pretty terrible people.
Yeah, there's plenty of shows that have terrible people.
I'm fascinated by the terrible people thing, because I get it, and I've felt it before, but sometimes there's exceptions. Like, yeah. I know people who will not watch Seinfeld because they're very selfish
they're
people
all
on there.
But it's very watchable.
But it's very watchable, and I think you kind of, like, always are seeing some side of yourself in these characters.
But these aren't the terrible people that you would say, like, are in Breaking Bad. They're not doing... I mean, they're kind of in a way. They're doing a podcast with the serial killer.
They're enabling a serial killer.
Yeah, but that is called out in the show. I will say
that's funny because you know that was that Behind the Mask movie, mockumentary.
So Behind the Mask
something.
Is a good version of this.
Yeah,
Behind the Mask. They already did. They did this right, and Behind the Mask is the good version of this. This is such a good premise.
I would like to argue with you, but yeah, Behind the Mask is the better.
This is a good premise. They've got two good lead characters. The actor playing the West Side Ripper is a good actor. Like, I like everything. All the components are there, but I think their execution is way off.
Yeah,
and I think that was my ultimate disappointment. And also, I was annoyed it wasn't one season. This should have been a one season show, one and done. Leave it open to do a sequel or something. But like, they should not be stopping on a cliffhanger.
So this is on.
I also had a scene that I had a real issue with the animal.
Yes, that was a big thing where I'm like, there was no need to do that.
No, there was no need for it.
Is there some animal killing?
Yes.
Is it funny?
No.
It's done to sort of spiral one of the characters, and it is, it's too much for me. That definitely soured me on it too.
Most of the things you're saying kind of make me intrigued.
Yep.
I mean, I'd watch an episode.
Dan,
and see
if you
what
have
you
access to Peacock, you should watch this.
I don't, but I can find someone who does and like maybe watch an episode. I honestly don't think I'm going to be like super won over.
But
I'm just curious.
You should watch the rest of The Good Place for fuck's sake.
Nope.
He will watch it when he feels the time.
All I do is dig
ever
my
feel
heels
that.
Harder, Randy.
I know. Nick, you were going to mention Renfield. I don't know if you want to talk about Renfield.
I'll talk about Renfield.
Also
worth
flawed.
It? Worth it or not?
Oh, it is an utterly flawed movie.
I had a feeling.
If you don't press play, should you watch this movie?
I don't think you should press play.
Okay.
There we go.
Here's the thing. I don't know why they didn't promote this, because it probably would have gotten a few people into it. This is written by the guy who wrote Walking Dead. This is Kirkman.
Really?
Yeah, he wrote this damn movie.
Oh.
And I don't know if it got, like rewrites or anything like that, but
it does kind of sound like his high concept sort of thing.
So it's kind of this weird heightened world where, I mean, Dracula obviously exists. This is a continuation of the original Bela Lugosi Dracula, played by Nicolas Cage, Nicolas Cage's to the nth degree in some cases. He is very much chewing scene.
Yeah.
And it's supposed to be...
But is he like a main character, or is it mainly about the other
dude? He's the main villain.
Okay, yeah.
Renfield is the main character, played by Nicholas Holt.
Right.
And
it's basically
sort of
his little lackey man.
Yeah, his lackey, and kind of his... I mean... hero's journey in a weird kind
sure.
of way.
I saw him do some martial arts in the trailer.
Well, in this one, when he eats bugs, he gets like heightened abilities, so he is able to sort of help out. He ends up saving the life of Awkwafina.
When I eat bugs, I just get a good meal.
Right. I mean,
what happens when Kraven eats bugs?
I think he gets big belly
bug
ache.
Powers?
He gets bug bonded.
but
sexy
he ends
bug
up.
Man.
He Nicholas Holt ends up saving Awkwafina's life, who's a cop. She has a blah, blah, blah. It's a boring the character arc.
Yeah.
And chaos ensues. It is a very tongue-in-cheek, very bloody, very gory, over-the-top movie.
Oh, interesting. I forgot it was gory.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's like gore to the power of, like, 5. Maybe not, like, Walking Dead levels, but Kirkman did enjoy kind of pushing the
envelope. I know he likes the gore from Invincible.
Yeah.
His teenage superhero comic was really the place.
Honestly, the trailer had the best scene, which is the support group.
Yeah,
I actually thought
that might be a recurring thing throughout like the whole movie.
There is kind of a recurrence, but they end up getting killed by Nicolas Cage. Okay.
Is that like an opening?
No, it's like mid.
Okay. Let me ask you this though: you said it's meant to be a continuation of Bela Lugosi's Dracula. Bela Lugosi's Dracula is not gory. It's a traditional vampire bites you on the neck and you kind of swoon and die.
But Yeah, I mean, but Kirkman is like, but what if it wasn't?
Is it like, but then why bother to link it to the one where he infamously is like kind of the classy Dracula?
I don't know.
Why not just have it be some new vampire? Ah, whatever.
Yeah, it's like one of those,
I understand,
like,
it's Hollywood.
It's like one of those Kirkman.
But the trailer didn't even bother to do that. Like, the trailer didn't show like any ties to it. So it's not like they were like, oh, let's really draft off like people's nostalgia for it, yeah, and then throw them for a surprise twist as it gets gory and weird. Like, they weren't even trying to like lure people in with it. So
Peacock is NBC, which is owned by... It's not the people who are trying to do their Dark Universe,
Universal.
Right? That's it is. So this is, I think, maybe them trying their hand at trying to do more of the Dark Universe
thing. Do you think maybe this is like they filed the serial numbers off this and it was like the Dark Universe
thing? I honestly think it might have been.
Could Jack Nicholson's Wolf,
yes,
from 1994,
was it Universal?
Or whatever,
yep,
fight...
was that Universal?
I don't know.
If it was, then yes.
Yes,
it's time for anybody who was ever in some dumb monster movie, go ahead and stick them all together shit movie.
Well, do I want to rewatch Wolf? It's been a long time.
I've had this question occasionally myself. Was James Spader in that? Is he the bad guy?
I thought Jack Nicholson was the bad guy.
No, Jack Nicholson is the guy who's like he's a corporate dude, but he's like shit upon by other like more predatory kind of like,
really?
Corporate dudes, yeah, that are like Gordon Gekko types, and then he like gets his groove back his by when he wolfs out. Jack Nicholson is like, and he gets the girl and stuff like that.
You know, given all the multiverse stuff everybody's doing, maybe it's time for a monster multiverse. You get Bela Lugosi's Dracula and Jack Nicholson's Wolf.
God, that was
and Nicholas Holt's Renfield all in the same story.
Yeah. Why not just cram it together?
Frankenstein.
Yeah. Let's go ahead and make it weird. Yeah, same way. Obviously, the Spider-Verse brings in, like,
the
Lego.
The Munsters meet the Addams Family.
Yes.
Sure. Rob Zombie would love to do that, I'm sure.
Yeah. Rob Zombie can be also, some of his characters can be in it, too. His creepy southern fried torture porn people.
Yes, yeah.
Oh, God, the House of a Thousand Corpses.
Yeah, House of a Thousand Corpses in the Monsterverse, too.
Yeah.
Oh, God. Oh, God.
So is Kong of Skull Island.
Yeah, it's all multiverse.
Kong of Skull Island kills everybody in the first 5 minutes.
You can't. That's Warner Brothers. You can't do that.
No, we're going to cross them over anyway.
No, Legendary Pictures doesn't like that.
Making up this stupid thing right anyway. So,
Nick, the other thing you were going to mention was Escape Room.
That was actually Dave.
Oh, yeah, that's actually
Dave. Dave's going to mention Escape Room.
But it's per a recommendation Nick had from like a year ago. This is like one of those like little kind of quickly done horror movies that's only like an hour and a half long, maybe an hour and 37 minutes, something like that.
Yeah.
And it sounded to me, and it did prove to be like, it reminded me of one of those sort of Blumhouse horror, teen type horror movies, that's what I call them, that are pretty good, like Truth or Dare or some of those other recent ones. This movie is indeed about like a kind of like Saw style scary escape room sort of thing. That's at the heart of the premise. What hooked me is there's an in the opening 5 minutes, it has an opening catchy opening scene. And by the way, Randy, I think even you might enjoy this one. It's a good kind of pop horror experience. There's a catchy scene that shows you something that won't happen in the movie until like an hour into it, or so. But it begins with it, and you're like, "Whoa, how did we get here?" And then cut to, maybe six people, something like that?
Yeah, six people sort of getting an invitation to
an escape room. And they range from a slightly Gordon Gekko-esque kind of, maybe not quite that highest level of power, but a wealthy, like, kind of investment banker or something like that.
An ex-military person.
And by the way, that guy is like, he's kind of, they're all a little tropey. That the wealthy guy is kind of a little heartless and self-centered.
Yep.
There's some dude who like works at like what a grocery store or something like that. Who's clearly what was he dealing with?
He's like a night stalker kind of thing. Yeah.
Night stalker.
Correct.
right. But yeah, he's like kind of in a dead end place in his young life. There's a sort of nerdy shy girl and a bunch of other characters. Oh, and one guy who's like. An escape room kind of nerd. He like loves. He lives for this kind of stuff and kind of knows their vibe.
And the ex-military, played by Deborah Ann Woll, who.
Oh right.
you will know if you watch Daredevil. Yep.
And so they get to this escape room. There are for various reasons they've all gone there. Somebody's like, oh, I need the money. Someone's just curious. Someone thinks it's like
a rich guy
thinks it's like a gift that he's obligated to deal with because it's from like a client. And so they show up and things start to go weird. The escape room nerd is actually a pretty good bit of exposition where somebody else is like, oh, I've never done one of these. What do you even do in this? And it's like, oh, he's like, oh, it's great. He's like, I've done like 50 of them or whatever. And he's like, yeah, this is kind of happened and this kind of happens. And they're like, so they're waiting in the lobby and they're like, so why aren't they even talking to us? And they realize it started already. And there's like the way that first room builds is actually pretty cool. There is some creepy, not creepy, but like, oh, a lot of good what would you do sort of moments. Because at first, early on, you're like, okay, you could buy that this is not full Death Trap yet. You might just think, oh, there just is a slightly edgier escape room. Where it's like, oh, why is it so warm in this room and stuff like that. Like, this is like actually like really uncomfortably warm. Is this going to keep going?
The escape rooms are actually clever is the right word. Mm-hmm. But they're well thought out.
Right.
And that in itself becomes sort of a character. And I think that the budget that they put into it, it doesn't look cheap.
No, like, early on I was thinking, it was like, well, this is probably is a kind of a budgety movie. But unlike a regular escape room, Randy, at one point they walk through, like, a door. They get out of, like, sort of one of these things that started out in, like, a regular room in, like, I don't know, it's not like a high-rise. It was almost more like a big warehouse or something like that.
No, it was like
what was it?
It was like a commercial building.
Okay.
Yeah.
But it's pretty big. But they walk into it, and they walk out into an area, and it looks like they're in a snowy wilderness.
Oh.
Because there are the... But it's like that sort of... Ultimately, they'll realize, okay, this is a wall over here. It's made to look very, like, snowy, and there's, like... Actually, it actually is super cold.
Yeah.
There's, like, a big, giant pond. There are trees.
There's, it like, is
made,
ice.
There's ice. It's made to look as real as possible to them, and indeed, they're dealing with a... We're going to die of exposure before long. Yep. And so they're like... Well, we think there might be, like, we've got this fishing rod, and they start figuring it out, and they're like, there's something in the ice down there, but we might have to do things where, like, somebody might have to put their hand in, like, super freezing water and potentially get frostbite or something from it. And meanwhile, like the nerdy chick is starting to, like, see certain patterns in the rooms. The guy who knows about escape rooms, I thought, gave a good timeline early on where he's talking about this as if... Actually, most escape rooms are usually just kind of one location, but he talks about there being, like, four or five kind of rooms you go through, and that is roughly the timeline of the movie. You're gonna, you kind of know early on, they're gonna go through, like, maybe five, maybe six rooms, and hopefully get their prize or whatever. Things start happening. Not everybody makes it out.
Right. Yeah.
But it's, It does the thing that I want sort of in a fun horror movie, which is I learn more about the characters as we go. I mostly like them. Even, like, the skeevy guy, you're kind of like, oh, he might be okay. Okay, is it possible, or is he going to be like the dude in Barbarian, where you're like, well, I thought he was going to be okay for a split second, and then he wasn't?
You do learn all their backstories.
You learn everybody's backstory. You learn why they're all in this crazy thing. It's a little out there.
It is.
But, like, the room, Nick, you brought up when we were talking about this, the room that's, like, the pool hall, like, pool hall, like a bar, is crazy.
It's
super fun. They all have that feel of, like, if I had to do that, could I do that? Would I be able to pull that off, you know? And yet they also work on that satisfying thing of, like, seeing people come together in an escape room in real life.
Yeah.
Anyway, this is not a great movie. Some of the lines are, the characters are kind of tropey and cliche, and not every single, like, moment hits, but it's like, it was, like, much better than I expected it to be.
Yeah.
And I think if you watch the first 5 minutes, you're going to kind of want to watch the rest of it. And since it's only an hour and a half, it's pretty easy to do.
It's an easy watch. It's a good popcorn
flick. That's like one third of a Batman movie.
Yes. Or three episodes of the show you wasted your time on.
I will kill you.
I definitely liked it more than the Batman.
Absolutely.
I think I would probably like
I would
it
go ahead and so two of this would make up one Batman, and I would watch this twice in a row rather than return to Matt Reeves' Batman.
There is a sequel.
Right.
It is
lesser.
Lesser than the first one, but still not bad.
Is
there's
the sequel
still some
called Escaped Room?
No.
Escape rooms.
But the same,
tradition of aliens.
But the same level of detail in the escape rooms are still there. There's a lighthouse in one.
And I assume, Nick, does it indeed include the people who survive without saying too much about who survives?
Yes.
Okay. Lighthouse? What?
There is a lighthouse in one of the escape rooms.
Why would you tell me that?
Because...
I don't want to see the shitty sequel to this movie.
It wasn't a shitty sequel. It just was a lesser sequel.
I watched that movie Cube one time, which was an escape room type thing from the 90s.
Cube is good.
And I actually like Cube. It feels more low budget.
Yeah.
But it's still a fun movie. And I know that there are sequels of varying levels of quality that I've never gotten around to. I might for this. I might give it a shot.
I think most of the people were involved in the sequel of Escape Room. I don't think most of the people were involved in the sequel of Cube.
I'll say this. It sort of ends with a few twists and reveals,
yeah.
Even after they've kind of gotten out. There's some twists to be had. And I'm like, oh, it's open-ended, and I don't mind if I never see a sequel, and it's just like, oh, that was what was going on. Oh, that's still out there.
They run with some of those threads.
But I think it works okay as a standalone, even though there's a cliffhanger, arguably.
Yep.
Anyway, there you go.
All right, that will probably wrap it up for us this week. We'll be back next week with more, and until that time,
yo-cho!
Roguecast is a weekly podcast broadcast from Rogues Gallery Comics and Games in Round Rock, Texas. You can find us online on Facebook and at www.roguesgallerytx.com and email us comments or questions at roguesgallerytx@gmail.com. Thanks for listening.